want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom, drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
And welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Congressman Joe Sestak going to be talking to us about the South Korean Free Trade Agreement, about what's going on in the House in his final days there. Also, maybe a little bit about what his plans are, because he did lose the Senate race that we all so... I know myself, I wanted him in the worst way. I'm dreading the next 6 years as the first senator from Wall Street takes over there under our name. So we'll talk to Joe about that. And also Tom Conway in the second hour from the United Steelworkers Union is going to be talking about the trade agreement. Is this in the best interest of workers? And as I've been saying all along, you know, it was kind of weird that labor took so long to come out and make their choice, especially given the fact that the UAW, the auto workers were there in the beginning. Now, decidedly, they, you know, in their best interest, they think, on the short term, this agreement is going to help them. I disagree, but here again, I'm not the elected representative of the auto workers. So it'll be interesting to have the conversation with Tom Conway. Cause I don't want this to be something where you see the House of Labor divided. I think this is, and we've seen it today where labor has come out, in pretty good fashion and said, look, there are a lot of things wrong with this and please go back and fix them. Not that they're against trade. I don't think anybody is against trade. We're against this insane idea of free trade. Because if you look at this agreement, we lose. We're going to lose somewhere near 160,000 jobs over the next 5 years. And that's a conservative estimate. We could down the road see the complete end of our auto industry simply because you have a 35% national content. That, to me, is a problem, which means 65% of the parts that the American cars shipped into Korea will be from Mexico, and 65% of the parts that the Korean cars have coming into the U.S. could be Chinese. So it didn't create jobs for anybody except the Chinese and the Mexicans, of course. We being the losers again. So here again today, nothing new. Get used to it. Gridlock, baby, gridlock. Nothing new. Republican senators blocked Democratic legislation. And this one, above all of them, to me, is a massive slap in the face. They blocked legislation today that would have provided medical care to those people that we called heroes on 9/11. The folks who ran into the buildings, the people who sifted through the rubble, the people who did all of those things that we demanded of them as a society. Now they're sick. And Republicans have, in unison, stood against helping them. Now understand, these illnesses were because of the breathing of the toxic fumes, because there was arsenic, or there was asbestos in these buildings, the cement dust, the smoke, the smoldering pile that they were inhaling, and not to mention the fact that Christy Todd Whitman came out and said, oh, the air quality is just fine. And as soon as she said that, you saw every respirator of the few that they had come off people's faces. Because Christy Todd Whitman said it's okay. She, of course, being the head of the EPA at the time, the Environmental Protection Agency. So you would think her word would have meant something. It didn't. The numbers were fudged. It was a show. And I remember a guy that I met who worked on the pile who said what they did around Ground Zero is they put all these red lights up. And they, you know, they had made a big show of how they wired these big bright red lights so that if those red lights went on, everybody was to scatter. It was an emergency. Well, he told me they were never hooked up to any power. So there was never a chance of those red lights going off. That to me, amazing, amazing stuff. And you'll remember back in September, we talked about the House of Representatives that passed this bill. In fact, it was known as the James Zedroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act. Remember, he was a New York detective, a police department detective who was one of the people who raced into the building. He was one of the folks who was there the day. Later, he ended up with some breathing complications, had a bunch of serious illnesses, and he eventually succumbed to his illness. And the medical examiner said this was a direct relation to what happened on 9/11. The breathing of the fumes, all of that. So the House passed the bill. Now, Republicans blocked it. And what the Democrats were hoping in this lame duck session, they were hoping to be able to, this at least, get this passed through. Because if we can't take care of these folks, what can we do? And what's amazing to me is there are actually people who are deluded enough to believe that the Republicans actually care about this country. And they're actually surprised that the Republicans would stand in opposition of this bill. And again, are you not getting this? They don't care about working people. I'm not surprised because I know what they are. But at the end of it, supporters, people like me, believe we should be taking care of the folks that we call heroes. Because the question is who's going to be the next hero? When we have another one of these moments in history, when some big catastrophe happens, and believe me, it's going to happen. Who are we going to call? Who is going to be the one to step forward and say, oh yeah, I'm going to put my family at risk. Oh yeah, I'm going to put my life at risk. And nobody's going to have my back. Yeah, let me step up and do that. Just like we're doing to the military. Going, yeah, you guys go ahead. God. And we're going to give you a shoddy pay raise. Because, you know, in the military, you should keep up with what the private sector gets. You know, we'll call you heroes. We'll give you ribbons. We'll throw you parades. But if you want to support your family, you want to put food on your table. No. You know, we'll give you all the words and all the, you know, the ceremony and the ribbons and all that. Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. But no money. Because it's just like the private sector. And I ask how many times in the private sector do you go to work and there's a chance you'll never come home? So we need to take care of these people because we ask so much of them. So one idea in this whole mess today was to insert the bill into the tax thing there. The bill that the White House and the Republicans came up with and a number of weak-kneed Democrats. So they figured, well, let's do that. Not going to happen. The bill, of course, that didn't pass in the Senate today was shot down 57 to 42. And the same person would go 57, 42. 57 is the majority number. It should pass, right? No. We've got a 60-vote rule now. Nothing can ever pass without 60 votes, according to the Republicans, because we haven't got enough to get cloture. So everything needs a supermajority. And Republicans really have no problem screwing these working people. And they went back to say, well, how are we going to pay for it? How are we going to pay for the $7.4 billion? Oh, how would we? Oh, I got an idea. Why don't we cut out the hundreds of billions you're handing to the top 2%? There's an idea. Because, you know, evidently, the people who tout their family values and their moral fiber and their love of country and their love of Americana and the flag and apple pie and mom and puppies, they're very happy to kill off the puppies like we talked about last night. They could care less about the American worker and really the flag, I guess, as well. Because we have no moral obligation here. So give me that family value rhetoric, but follow it up by actually doing something like this. And I go back to, you know, who will be the next hero? Who will it be? And Carolyn Mahoney, a representative from New York, she wanted to add to the tax bill, and she, you know, she dared the Republicans to oppose it. Well, guess what? They did. And they're going to continue to oppose it because they don't care about people, especially those people. And what's amazing is you get the mayor of New York lobbying for the bill. You got the New York police chief coming out there saying, you know, you got to help these people. The senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, who's the chief sponsor of the bill in the Senate, she even reached out to the little shrub who didn't bother to respond. I mean, I think that speaks volumes. I think it speaks volumes. And the money, I think, is very well spent. $3.2 billion of it would be to go over the next 8 years to monitor and treat people. I think that's good. $4.2 billion of it would go to the Victims Compensation Fund for job loss and economic loss. Help people support their families. That's smart to me. Kind of a workman's comp situation. Because, look, New York's going to get saddled with this. Because a lot of the policemen and the firemen are going to try and claim it as workman's comp. We should just say right up front, this is what it is, take care of these people, and be done with it. A little bit of it would also help settle the lawsuit that the 10,000 rescue and cleanup workers recently settled. You remember that lawsuit where the judge initially said it wasn't enough money? That one, going to help that out. And I think that is a very, very good thing. Very good thing. Also, the Republicans decided that they were going to be the party of no. They got that old no feeling. It's kind of like the loving feeling that most people used to have, but for these cold-hearted sons of... they had to go and say no again, and they have blocked the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Again, not my big issue. Personally, I think it is a rights issue. I think these folks deserve to have the same rights. If you're defending this country, if you're putting your behind on the line, I'm sorry. You should be allowed to be whoever you are. It's just in your personal life, do whatever you got to do. Now, look, you're not going to come to work with pink uniform on and, you know, the joke kind of thing. That's not going to happen, and that's not who these people are. But the right would have you believe that. And I'm telling you, I don't think it matters. But here again, the vote was 57-40. Can't reach that 60. Because everything with the Republicans has to be 60 votes. And, you know, the gridlock, I'm telling you, it's one of those things. We're going to see constant gridlock. Because the Republicans in the Senate know they don't have the ability to push their agenda yet. So this is where everything will stop. And look, it's supposed to stop in the Senate. The system was set up that way by the founding fathers. They wanted to have deliberation. They wanted to have debate. They didn't want to move at the speed of the House. Because the House was supposed to be closest to the people and, you know, have that raw fervor, that raw emotion of the people. And the Senate was supposed to be a little more methodical, think it through, okay, you know, we can move through on some things. But I don't think they ever envisioned this. And the filibuster rule, in my opinion, should go back to an actual filibuster. If you're against it, you should have to take the floor, make your argument, and stand there the entire time and make your argument. And actually debate this nonsense that, okay, I raise my hand, I'm going to filibuster, and then that ends everything. Has got to stop. It's got to stop. You know, we all love to think about Mr. Smith goes to Washington and he stands up and he filibusters and he makes his point. Let's go back to that. And, you know, I think the guy from Oregon is saying, let's go back to that. let's actually have the debate. So if you're against Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you're against the repeal of it, you stand up in there and you tell me why you're against it. And then when you're done talking, sit down and let's have the votes. Simple, simple stuff. Simple stuff. Anyway, today on the program, again, Congressman Joe Sestak and Tom Conway from the United Steelworkers. We're going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the hell with it.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Service Employees International Union says ending tax breaks for the rich could create 3.4 million jobs over 2 years. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says the $134 billion that the government is handing back to the richest Americans in the next 2 years could instead be used to reduce unemployment by 2.2%. SEIU says the government decision to not create jobs with that money will instead give CEOs huge tax bonuses. According to U.S. Chamber Watch, CEOs at Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, ExxonMobil, News Corp, and Massey Energy will each get more than $1 million extra dollars thanks to the tax cuts for the rich deal. UAW President Bob King will be in South Korea Friday to meet with the Korean Metal Workers Federation. It's part of the union's support for striking temporary workers at Hyundai. UAW picketed Hyundai in Detroit this week as part of a global worker justice campaign. UAW is working with labor organizer Richard Benzinger in a renewed effort to organize workers at foreign automakers' U.S. plants. Republican Wisconsin Governor-elect Scott Walker, in a speech at the Milwaukee Press Club, said he's planning an attack on unions to drive down their wages and benefits. Walker says anything from decertifying to changing state labor laws affecting the collective bargaining rights of public workers in Wisconsin is on his agenda. He, of course, has no power to actually decertify a union, but he and the GOP legislature could wipe out the legal right of public employees to collectively bargain with the state. State employee unions are bracing for a war to defend themselves. Wisconsin AFSCME's Marty Beal says state workers aren't about to sacrifice their benefits for the future of a political tyrant. Delta has won another round against having unionized employees. Jesse Russell reports.
Another day means another union appeal of voting results at Delta. The International Association of Machinists is alleging that the airline used union-busting tactics to push baggage handlers into voting against union representation. Delta has claimed the allegations are unjustified. 53% of the baggage handlers voted against union representation. That vote comes on the heels of a vote by stock clerks who also voted down representation. In a statement, the Machinists Union alleges Delta created an atmosphere of such widespread surveillance, coercion, and intimidation that a fair election was impossible. The National Mediation Board will weigh in on if a revote has any merit. The Association of Flight Attendants also narrowly lost a vote for representation of flight attendants at Delta, and that union has also called for a new election under similar allegations of intimidation.
If you're hired after January 1st at Walmart, don't expect to make as much as your coworkers on Sundays. Walmart will stop paying Sunday workers an extra dollar an hour, they say, due to declining sales. It won't impact workers in states that require overtime on Sundays, and it only affects workers hired in the new year. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, just get into it. Get stupid. Get it started. Come on. Get it started. Get it started.
To the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, hungryandhomeless.org. Get that in your head, hungryandhomeless.org. I want to thank the people today who came and donated We had a couple of donations to Project Sharon Carlisle Cares on the PayPal account there, although I got a problem with PayPal today, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But thank you for your donation. It's going to go a long way to help the hungry and homeless in our community in the coming winter months. So thanks so much. The White House is scrambling to line up votes for its tax cut deal, but one Democratic congressman, fortunately, he doesn't appear to be budging as of yet. Gary Ackerman, a Democrat from New York, appeared on MSNBC's The Dalen Radigan Show, and he said that members of the House Democratic Caucus are asking, why should we take the vote? Why? Why do we want to get blamed for adding to the deficit? And I got to be honest, he's right. And he asked this question, and I think he's spot on.
Why should we do the dirty work of the Republicans? Why should the Democrats, in order to be responsible to the majority of people who do need the kind of break that would be in this bill for them, have to reward the wealthiest people who aren't even asking? They found the dumbest people in America to take their fight up for them, to advocate for the wealthiest people. These people that are fighting for the wealthiest people are missing the benefits that they need in order to take care of the others.
And I agree with that sentiment. What he's saying is, look, you got all these people who are at the bottom of the economic ladder saying, yeah, we need to extend them their tax cuts for everybody. And I'm going, do you understand who everybody is? And do you understand how small you're going to end up with? That's not going to help the economy, and these folks at the top aren't going to create jobs. And as I've been saying for the longest time, this, what's going on right now, really, honestly, and truthfully, as Ackerman points out,
the Dream Act. This is the Republican wet dream act.
This is the Republican wet dream. And I said that the last couple of days. We're giving them their wildest dream. And the deficit commission, the cat food commission, whatever you're going to call it, the fact that they, with a straight face, proposed a 23% tax on the top, amazing to me.
Well, more and more Democrats are simply saying to Pelosi, and I think that's why she's doing what she's doing, look, it's not that we don't want tax relief for everyone, but we still have a little bit of time. Go back and fix some of the obvious mistakes.
Yeah, the obvious mistake being you're giving too much to the top. And I look at the New York Times piece today. Actually, it was yesterday. The tax package will aid nearly all, especially high earners, it said. The deal to extend the Bush-era tax cuts for an additional 2 years include a bevy of additional credits and deductions that will reduce the burden on nearly all households, but the tax benefits will flow most heavily to the top earners. And as we've been saying, the top 1%, they're going to end up with a more than a quarter of the $900 billion package here. And just like in 2001 and 2003 when Bush handed out all this money, they did much better than you and I did. And it's not because I'm jealous. It's because there's a matter of fairness. This deal that they're trying to push down our throat, you know, the wealthy walk away. The alternative minimum tax has been reduced. The estate tax has been lowered to anything most people thought it would. Mm-hmm. And most of the savings go to the very top. Those of us at the lower end or the middle end, not as much. And the wealthiest Americans, the New York Times say, will also reap tax savings from the proposal's plan to keep the dividend and capital gains taxes at 15%, well below the highest rates on ordinary income. Now, understand this. Understand. They're sitting on the beach, drinking Mai Tais, watching the young lasses walk by in the string bikinis. While the dividend checks are rolling in, they're paying less in taxes than you are busting your hump. Look, I'm not begrudging him that existence. God bless him if he can do it. But understand, it's a matter of fairness. And if you remember back in 2009, does the name David Tepper mean anything to anyone? Anybody remember David Tepper? Anyone? He was the hedge fund guy who bet the right way. He put the right bet on us bailing out the banks. He bet a lot of money on Bank of America. And his hedge fund brought in about $7 billion. And, of course, $4 billion of it ended up in his pocket. He paid 15% capital gains tax on $4 billion. I'm sorry. I don't think the janitor who cleaned up all the paper that was left behind after Mr. Tepper's celebration, I don't think he should have to pay higher taxes than Mr. Tepper. Sorry. But what's amazing to me is I don't hear the outrage. Because I think people are saying, well, you know, we're going to be okay. We working stiffs, they're going to take care of us too, right? Right? Tax cuts for all, tax cuts for everybody. Don't want to raise taxes on anyone. Well, the New York Times says the only groups likely to face a tax increase are those near the bottom of the income scales, individuals who make less than $20,000, and families who earn below $40,000. Again, very Reagan-esque, if you will. If you remember the tax reform bill of 86, what they did is they lowered the top marginal rate again, and they raised the bottom rate. So the poor paid more, but the wealthy, they got to pocket more. And that's been the way it's been since the Reagan years. And what did we get out of this? We handed a bunch of money to the top. We gave away the estate tax. We gave away the alternative minimum tax. We gave away the top 2%. What did we get? What was our lottery winning? Where'd the windfall for us come from? Well, they were gracious enough to extend the unemployment for another 13 months, a maximum of 99 weeks. So the people who were first affected by the Bush recession, sorry, you're out of luck. Have a nice day. Best of luck to you. Whatever. There's always the homeless shelter and Project Share to get some food from. And again, hungryandhomeless.org, if you go over there and donate a couple of bucks, because those folks are going to need it. Now, there were some reasonable things. The earned income tax credit that they continued, the child credit that they continued, the child dependent child care credit, the tuition deductions, very, very good things. Personally, I think things matter of policy that should be permanent to help working class families. But as a result, let's say you made $55,000. What they're saying is under this, you're going to end up with about $2,700. If it happens. The two-income family who makes about $146,000 would owe about $7,000 less than if the tax cuts were allowed to expire. This proposal, however, does not include an extension of Obama's signature tax cuts, which was the making work pay credit. And again, this is one of those things that I was a big proponent of, because you have to save work in this country. And for low-income people, they were giving out $400 for an individual and $800 for a family. And in a way, it was helping employers who were paying minimum wage to hire people. So on a certain level, it's a good policy. But the Republicans, again, good policy be damned, let it go by the wayside. Now, here's the part that I love. The part that I love is if you made, the top 1%, if you were the top 1%, you made over $564,000. Had we just extended it for everybody but the top 2%, you would have gotten a tax break of $28,000. Now, if you listen to the Republicans during the whole debate, we're going to raise taxes on them. No. Had it stopped at $250,000, they would have gotten a $28,000 tax check. I think pretty reasonable, don't you? Republicans say no. Republicans say no. And you know why? Because they wanted to make sure that that guy making $564,000 a year got the full $70,000 of the Bush handouts. Now, I'm sorry. I think the $28,000 was a nice gesture. Here, please, go do something with it. Buy yourself an American car instead of an E-Class Mercedes. And we'll take the rest of that and maybe some job training for unemployed workers. Maybe school lunch programs. Maybe we'll pay our troops a little bit better instead of trying to cheat them, trying to get them on the cheap. Maybe we'll do a lot of the things that need to be done, like build roads and bridges, and maybe a 21st century education system so we can compete with the Chinese. I had a conversation with a guy today who said, I heard you the other night talking to one of your callers about education. And, we had this back and forth, and I said, what I wish I would have remembered Remember Steve, there was a TV show back in the 70s where Steve Martin did a primetime skit show where he played Socrates. And he was sitting in the jail, waiting for his sentence to come down. And all of his supporters are around him and they're, oh, Socrates, don't worry, we'll figure something out. And in comes his number one guy who says, he's got a grim look on his face and he's holding a cup and he goes, Socrates, the decision came down and they said, you're going to have to drink hemlock. So Steve Martin grabs the cup of hemlock and he slams it down. Ah, that was nothing. I got off easy there. And everyone's looking at him like, oh my God, what'd you do? He's like, what? And everybody in the room goes, Socrates, hemlock's poison. And Steve Martin goes, oh man. Oh, now you tell me. Every day it's Socrates, what is truth? Socrates, what is justice? But never once did anyone ever say, Socrates, hemlock is poison. And the reason I think it's funny is the guy kept asking about, well, why aren't we searching for why are we here and what are we doing and where are we going? And it really, that popped into my head and it caught me as funny. Because, you know, while you're pondering these big philosophical questions that have never been answered, the things that we actually know, the knowledge that you need to accumulate could kill you. Like Socrates saying, no one ever told me. Hemlock is poison. Anyway, gotta take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Do you love your mega bank? I'm talking about your local branch of City Chase Wells Morgan of America, or some similar financial conglomeration. As you might have learned from experience, these outfits have thousands of bankers who specialize in finding innovative new ways to gouge consumers worldwide. From rip-off fees to refusing to refinance home loans, the friendly slogan of these giants is, we don't care. We're too big to fail. Unfortunately, Washington is too cowed by Wall Street money to cut these arrogant and avaricious giants down to size. But guess what? You and I can do it. We can make them smaller, one deposit at a time, by simply moving our money out of their clutches. After all, it is our money. You can join the thousands of Americans who are walking away from the don't-give-a-damn financial fortresses and switching their accounts to community banks, credit unions, socially responsible investment firms, and other banking entities eager to treat you like a valued customer. A recent consumer survey found that the biggest banking conglomerates, such as J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Bank of America, have sunk to their lowest consumer satisfaction level in years. 66% of customers say they'd consider taking their money out of these grasping empires. Appealing alternatives exist all across America. At credit unions, for example, late fees and overdraft fees average only half of what the big banks charge, and credit unions offer loans with interest rates that are 20% lower than those assessed by the giants. This is Jim Hightower saying, why put up with mega bank megalomania? Here are two websites to help you find a local bank that gives a damn about you and your community. FindACreditUnion.com and MoveYourMoney.info/FindABank. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Time to rearrange. Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show. You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say
revolution starts now. Yep. I think it's time for a change as well, and that's why on December 15th, they're holding a day of action next Wednesday to focus some public attention on Rite Aid. The employees in the community are having a day of action trying to get people to realize, look, hey, they said that they were going to negotiate with their employees, and it's not happening. This action will be all across the country in stores in New York, Massachusetts, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Virginia, Florida, California, Arizona, Oregon, and Washington. And they're asking their people to come out and say, look, you've got a CEO that's making $4.5 million a year, despite the company being in big trouble. You've got the company trying to force huge increases on their workers for health care while you're paying $4.5 million to your CEO. There's a problem there. And really, the truth of the matter is Rite Aid's got some problems, and this pattern that they've gotten into of delays and I guess like many corporations, when it comes to bargaining, they tend to stall, and they tend to drag out, and they tend to do things to try and break down their workers. Well, I'm telling you, it's not going to happen. The Rite Aid employees, I think they're united, and this is going to be a good action. The company also has converted some of their good-paying jobs into low-wage part-time positions where the workers have no benefits. So there are going to be some actions around the country. Here in Pennsylvania, you're going to see thousands of workers out. We're probably going to do something right down the road here. So that will be a good thing, I think. So you'll want to look out for the day of action, Jake. You going to show up?
I'll be there.
Good deal. Because I'm sure they'll do something right here. I'm pretty sure about that. Let's go to our Borowitz report. In an effort to end what he called the bickering and rancor in Washington, President Obama agreed today to extend Republicans custody of his boys for an additional 2 years. He says, I know my critics are going to make a big deal out of this, the president told reporters at the White House, but all this does is formalize an agreement that was already in place. Mr. Obama said that extending the Republicans' custody of his family jewels through 2012 was like the Holy Grail for them, but I'm keeping my eyes on the North Star, adding, I have no idea of what that means. Moments after the two-year transfer of Mr. Obama's family jewels was announced, Vice President Joe Biden defended the president against critics from his own party, saying, I know he's going to catch a lot of heat for this, but it took cojones to do this. Emerging from the Oval Office after the deal was struck, Republican leader John Boehner pronounced himself pleased with the outcome, saying the president put what he had on the table and we came away with what we wanted. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said the agreement Obama's family jewels would make upcoming budget negotiations go much more smoothly. This greatly reduces the size of the president's package. You gotta love the Borowitz report right there. Anyway, again, I want to go back to the food drive real quick because I want to make sure everyone knows that we're doing the Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event. We're going to be staying out at the Carlisle Giant, 255 South Spring Garden Street, December 18th through the 24th. You can come out there anytime between the 18th and the 24th. See us there. But if you're going to come out and see us, bring something, a can of corn, maybe a whole case. We'd love to have a couple of cartfuls, whatever you can spare. On the 23rd, we're going to be having a blood mobile from 3 to 7 p.m. And the good people at the Central Pennsylvania Blood Bank will be donating $2 for every person who tries to give blood. I know some folks have a hard time giving blood, but if they get to sticky with the needle at least once to give it a try, they're going to throw $2 that way. So that's a good thing. Also, if you're part of a business and you want to help buy a skid of food, we are doing Skid Row again this year where you can buy a portion of a skid. Because look, honestly and truthfully, the best thing that we can do for Project Share and Carlisle Cares is give them financial resources because they can turn a buck into a couple of bucks. And that is a good thing. Anything to add?
Yeah, one other thing, and we've been saying it every day. You know, we try to contact as many businesses as possible. But if we haven't contacted your business and you want to do something on your own, either among your employees or go to your own the top people in your company, and you want to come out to the giant parking lot, we will give you a heads up. We will give you a shout out for your company. Anything you can do, and as Rick said, the best thing you can do, although we will accept groceries, non-perishables, and it will be appreciated every can. The best thing you can do is collect money, because we can multiply that and maximize our efforts.
Yeah, and that's something I really think we need to be able to do. It makes a lot of sense, and it's going to help us in the long run. I think it's a good thing. But again, December 18th through the 24th, that's what we're going to be doing. And we hope you'll come along with us. Also, you go back and you look at the talking about this tax bill. I'm seeing some signs that Democrats, and you said when you came in that Nancy Pelosi wasn't going to bring it up. Interesting. I would love to see that.
Well, they're upset. It's not just what's in the bill, Rick. It's how the Democrats perceived that the president treated them. He castigated them. He was angry that they were upset with him. But yet, some of them are coming back and said, look, he didn't negotiate with us. He negotiated with the Republicans. The part of the bill where they reduced the inheritance tax down to 35%, they weren't even consulted. And they feel left out. And not only do they feel left out, they don't like that provision, but the president didn't come and talk to them. So the president has some, not only some substantive issues with them, he has some communication problems with them. And I think this is one time where I think the Republicans are saying to the president, look, we just can't agree with this. We understand you want an agreement. We hope we get an agreement, but you need to go back and fix it, and there is time. And I think they're right. He's acting like it's the last minute of the fourth quarter, and you still have some of the fourth quarter that you can utilize and maybe go back and improve it.
Yep. And the thing is what I would be angry about is pretty much what you said. I'd be angry that we weren't consulted, and the thing that they've been fighting for, which is this tax break for everyone except that top 2%. And look, the top 2%, they were getting a tax cut as well. $28,000 for someone making $564,000 a year. To me, that's a tax cut. In fact, that's a bigger portion than most of us are going to get. But they chose to, again, because of the 60 vote rule, they chose to say, we're going to push it along.
No, there's another thing in there. Why would they need to soften the blow on the minimum tax? Minimum tax was started simply to catch people who pay nothing or very little. So it's a very minimal tax, and now we're even making the blow even less. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, and it's one of those things that I think we need to seriously look at, because it is a matter of fairness for one, but two, we are in a major economic crisis. We're in a major economic crisis. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. We got Dave on line one. How are we doing tonight, Dave?
Hi, not bad. How are you?
Hey,
listen, I was actually last night, and kept hearing this guy during your breaks talking about the sins and trials of Tom DeLay, and I think I heard him three or four times in all the time that I was listening. And that's fine and good, Tom DeLay's probably a crook, and if he did all the things that they claim he did, he can sit and rot in jail as far as I'm concerned.
Well, he has been found guilty, Dave.
Right. I'm just wondering if that same guy or anybody else has done a similar steal on Charlie Rangel.
Yeah, I have as well. Look, I'm not a big Rangel fan. I wasn't a Jefferson fan. Mr. Cold Cash himself. Yeah, I'll use the right wing frame there. Yeah, the guy was a crook, and I say you get all the crooks out.
Absolutely.
The difference here is that Tom DeLay, the things that he did, lasted for at least 10 years and are never going to be able to be undone. By breaking the law the way he did, he was able to have Texas redistricted, which ended up costing a number of Democrats their seats.
Right.
Which had a lot of things. Once that building block, once that block went down, it was like a domino effect. A bunch of stuff went that way. Personally, I'm thrilled to death that the guy was found guilty. I wish we'd find more of these crooks guilty. And if you go to our friends at CREW, Citizens for Responsible Ethics in Washington, Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW.org, they have a list of both parties of the criminals that we should be going after. And I don't limit it to just one party.
Well, there's no question about that. I just thought it was, sort of a double standard because I know what, the Rangel situation has been going on for quite a few years as well.
Yeah, but the Rangel thing, he was just trying to build some center to make himself look better. He wasn't actually using the money for political gain of his own in the way that DeLay was. And the DeLay thing, and I think it's the Hightower minute. Wasn't it the Hightower? Was it Hightower? Okay, it was Hightower. You got to understand that there's a history between Jim Hightower and Tom DeLay because they're both from Texas.
Right.
So that the reason, and I didn't hear it, I didn't pay attention to it, I'm sorry, but I believe that that's one of those moments of satisfaction, Dave.
Right.
Appreciate the call, buddy.
Okay.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to see DeLay went down because, he was an arrogant, self-serving elitist. I don't want to use some of the words some of the other street vernacular that I'm accustomed to using, having been.
He was an arrogant SOB. He was an arrogant SOB, and here's the difference. What he did, not only violated the law, but he changed the landscape in Texas, and hopefully it's not permanent, but certainly going to be there for a long time. If I remember, there were 5 Democratic seats that changed. But he gave the power to the Republicans who redistricted and tried to make those changes permanent to the degree that's possible.
Well, apportionment. Now it'll be undone because of this census. But, hey, that's 10 years. That's a whole decade that the Republicans controlled the state of Texas. And now maybe you won't. Here's the thing. They still control it. So you're not going to see the clawback or the snapback.
And who knows? Who knows the 5 change? Democrats lose 5, Republicans gain 5. How many bills, Rick? How many bills was that the margin? Yeah. And what a difference? I'm not sure. It could have been small, could have been negligible, could have been fairly substantial. No one will ever know. Yeah. Even if you did know, you can't undo it. That's the problem.
Right. So maybe Tom will be, instead of dancing with the stars, he'll be
dancing
the bars.
With Bubba.
He'll be dancing behind the bars. We're going to take a quick break, 1-888-520-RICK. And again, thanks, Dave, for the call, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we bet. Rick Smith.
If your loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of the 7 Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Don't take money and run.
back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Yesterday was Happy NAFTA Day. If you weren't there yesterday to talk about how wonderful the great free trade agreement, how wonderful it's been for America's working people, we'll talk about it a little bit more because I'm wearing my no NAFTA button today. This is one of those things. If you can't see it on the camera, folks who are watching on our Ustream account, maybe I'll move it a little closer. But yesterday was Happy NAFTA Day. Today is no NAFTA Day. Because now we realize how bad it has been for the working people. Understand that all of this stuff that we hear is the Wall Street version of how wonderful NAFTA has been. Oh, NAFTA has increased, relations between the two countries or the three countries, which I'm going to argue I don't think is accurate. I think we always had a very strong relationship with Canada because they're kind of our equal. We live sort of similar lives. In fact, I would argue that the average citizen in Canada has a higher standard of living than the average citizen here in the U.S. The difference is Canada doesn't have that massive weight sitting on top of them known as an elite aristocracy, the wealth class. They don't have that big bloated wealthy guy sitting on their back like we have. So I do think that they have a better standard of living. They got health care from cradle to grave. They don't ever have to worry about that. They have a much higher rate of unionization. They get a better share of the corporate profits. We don't. In fact, the third quarter of this year was the highest in corporate profits in the history of the country. Yet we have a 10% unemployment rate. And you got some nitwit in Cumberland County who's the economic chairman guy, whatever. I forget even what his title is. His name's Shoot. Shoothead. He wrote a piece the other day. And it's just one of those things that just makes me laugh. Saying, oh, well, you know, things are great. You know, making the argument, well, 90% of you are employed. Isn't that wonderful? But what about the rest of the folks? And what's interesting to me is the guy works for he takes taxpayer dollars. I love that. And he says that the community that has the lower taxes is the better community. So if they had lower taxes, maybe they'd pay him less because he was formed out of this whole thing. And it's really one of those perverse things. But they have us believe that NAFTA was great. NAFTA was a great thing. And the reality is it wasn't. There were a ton of disadvantages to NAFTA. We lost millions of jobs. We lost 1.7 million jobs just from 1994 to 2002. Wages have been stagnant. Why? Because there's always that looming threat over our heads as a working class that, hey, the boss might move the plant to NAFTA, Mexico, to the maquiladora, over there, and then be able to bring our products back. We destroyed the Mexican farmers. We destroyed all of their agribusiness, which, again, you know, we hear people talking about the undocumented workers coming across the border. Stop and think about this for a second. Put yourself in that position. This trade agreement has come in and has destroyed the agricultural community of Mexico. All these people who were living at the margin, they were at the margin already. They were living in lives of poverty to begin with. And they were being able to survive because they could farm. And they could feed themselves. Why? Because the Mexican Constitution guaranteed every community an area of land to feed their people. So in order to sign NAFTA, Mexico had to change their constitution and strip those communities of that land. So when the trade barriers came down, in came agribusiness from the U.S., who was heavily subsidized by the farm bill, and just destroyed all those folks. So now they can't sell their corn for what American companies do. They can't even buy they can buy corn cheaper than they can buy the seeds. Stop and think about it. They can buy the American product, the finished product, cheaper than they can buy the seeds to put into the ground. So they're out. They're done. They're out of business. So where do they go? They head north, where all the American companies are going to build their big factories. All to these maquiladoras, you got all these workers who are pushing there, which of course are pushing wages down, which couldn't make the American companies happier because they can get a glut of really, really cheap, disposable, exploitable labor. So the people who can't get exploited and can't be disposable, they're looking at each other going, what do we do? keep going north, because there's a bunch of employers in the U.S. who'd be happy to employ them. And you've got agencies down there and companies down there who've set up little street corner vending shops saying, hey, I can get you a job. It'll cost you half your income for the first year, but I can get you a job in Massachusetts. And you could be chopping the heads off fish. All you got to do is make it up there. And I got to tell you, I'd be running across the border to feed my family too. But we never hear that and we never talk about that. All we say is, well, they got to go home. To what? Our agribusiness destroyed their livelihoods. And then you look at the American worker who has seen their standard of living plummet, especially in the auto industry and all the parts supply industry. And I've always used that example of the Chevy Suburban, because that was one of the things that were made in both countries. When you would go to the lot, you could actually find a Suburban made in Mexico and one made in Janesville, Wisconsin. Well, the one in Janesville now is gone. They closed that Janesville plant, but you used to be able to. And they would sit on the lot next to each other at the same exact price. But you know, if one's made in Mexico, one's made in the U.S., the cost of labor was probably one-tenth in Mexico of what it was here in the U.S. Why is it the same price? If we're supposed to be benefiting from these great low wages and having great prices, why wouldn't the two Suburbans be different prices? Well, because Wall Street and corporate America pocketed the difference, much like they've done with every deregulation scheme. And I keep telling people, look, these free trade agreements, this deregulation, all of this stuff is a theft from the working class. It's redistribution of wealth from you who earns your wages through the sweat of your brow and the blood of you and sweat and tears that comes from your labor. It's coming from you to the guy who's sitting on the beach, collecting his dividend checks, drinking Mai Tais, looking at bikinis, paying 15% capital gains tax on the dividends checks, on the profits of your labor. And I don't see an enraged working class. And I look at this free trade agreement we're talking about with South Korea. Again, a Democratic president who I'm furious at right now, proposing a Bush-negotiated agreement with a couple of tweaks, just like Clinton did, a couple of tweaks to make it palatable for labor and for some Democratic senators. But at the end of this, folks, we're going to lose. And there are a number of provisions there. Why? The 35% content rule, for one. And as I said earlier, you're going to see 65% of the content from American vehicles going to Korea, probably coming from Mexico, and 65% of the content from Korean vehicles coming into the U.S. coming from China. To me, that's almost a no-brainer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why we have always on this show said it's important to buy made in America. A car, you're probably supporting a dozen different industries. A dozen. And if you're only requiring these countries to supply 35%, you're shortchanging you. They're still in this country right now, Rick. You can buy cars with 70% and 80% American content.
Yeah, I said before I went and looked at the. Now again, not that I'm going to get a Ford Mustang. I would love to, but Mama's not going to let that happen. Not with three kids. But I'm looking at it, and the transmission in the Mustang. Made in China.
Well, you and I both know, Rick, it isn't going to be long before China is going to be sending their version of General Motors, their cars.
Their Cherries. Their Cherry.
To compete 101 with our American auto.
And they're going to do it through South Korea. We're going to take a quick break. We're back with Tom Conway from the United Steelworkers. Stick around.
Smith Show, changing America for the better. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Service Employees International Union says ending tax breaks for the rich could create 3.4 million jobs over 2 years. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says the $134 billion that the government is handing back to the richest Americans in the next 2 years could instead be used to reduce unemployment by 2.2%.
SEIU says the government decision to not create jobs with that money will instead give CEOs huge tax bonuses. According to U.S. Chamber Watch, CEOs at Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, ExxonMobil, News Corp, and Massey Energy will each get more than $1 million extra dollars thanks to the tax cuts for the rich deal. UAW President Bob King will be in South Korea Friday to meet with the Korean Metal Workers Federation. It's part of the union's support for striking temporary workers at Hyundai. The UAW picketed Hyundai in Detroit this week as part of a global worker justice campaign. The UAW is working with labor organizer Richard Benzinger in a renewed effort to organize workers at foreign automakers' U.S. plants. Republican Wisconsin Governor-elect Scott Walker, in a speech at the Milwaukee Press Club, said he's planning an attack on unions to drive down their wages and benefits. Walker says anything from decertifying to changing state labor laws affecting the collective bargaining rights of public workers in Wisconsin is on his agenda. He, of course, has no power to actually decertify a union, but he and the GOP legislature could wipe out the legal right of public employees to collectively bargain with the state. State employee unions are bracing for a war to defend themselves. Wisconsin AFSCME's Marty Beal says state workers aren't about to sacrifice their benefits for the future of a political tyrant. Delta has won another round against having unionized employees. Jesse Russell reports.
Another day means another union appeal of voting results at Delta. The International Association of Machinists is alleging that the airline used union-busting tactics to push baggage handlers into voting against union representation. Delta has claimed allegations are unjustified. 53% of the baggage handlers voted against union representation. That vote comes on the heels of a vote by stock clerks who also voted down representation. In a statement, the Machinists Union alleges Delta created an atmosphere of such widespread surveillance, coercion, and intimidation that a fair election was impossible. The National Mediation Board will weigh in on if a revote has any merit. The Association of Flight Attendants also narrowly lost a vote for representation of flight attendants at Delta, and that union has also called for a new election under similar allegations of intimidation.
If you're hired after January 1st at Walmart, don't expect to make as much as your coworkers on Sundays. Walmart will stop paying Sunday workers an extra dollar an hour, they say, due to declining sales. It won't impact workers in states that require overtime on Sundays, and it only affects workers hired in the new year. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Our quote of the day comes from Reaganomics co-founder and former Reagan Assistant Secretary of Treasury Paul Craig Roberts. In his piece back in March, he said, quote, "Unlike the U.S., other countries are free of the hubris of being the indispensable nation. They know how hard it is to be successful, and they do not treat success as their birthright. They do not give away their economy for nebulous foreign policy goals or for short-term profits. They look ahead 20, 30 years while American CEOs look to the next quarter for profits." And again, you know what, as I go back and you look at this, these free trade agreements, who benefits? The CEO class. You and I, the folks who actually do the work, the ones who sweat, bleed, and die for the profits for the CEOs, we're the ones who get shortchanged in this. And that's why I'm glad to see a number of unions have come out finally and said, not in favor of it. I've got Tom Conway on the phone. He's a vice president at the United Steelworkers. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rick. I'm glad to be here.
You know, I'm looking at this, and right from the beginning, as soon as it came out Friday night when it was embargoed like another, like a Bush thing.
Yeah.
I was railing against it because it's just another one of these bad agreements for working people.
You know, I don't know how much longer the country thinks this trade regime, this sort of fast track mentality of dealing with trade can last. And, you know, now it's 2 and 3 decades. A trade imbalance with the rest of the world that just makes no sense at all. Last year with China, $280 billion. In auto parts with Korea and Japan alone, we're $40 billion out. And for our union, that really is sort of the central piece of this agreement and why we're going to be in opposition to it. That it's just going to be more auto components that flood into America and cost more jobs. And
you know, I've often asked the question, and again, my listeners know what my position is, that these trade agreements are all for Wall Street, and people like you and me and the working people of this country be damned. But I look at one thing. I look at this 35% content rule. Our negotiators gave away that part when the European Union was able to negotiate at 55%. Yeah. To me, that speaks volumes.
Well, it does, and there's also this drawback provision in this that's not the European one, where the South Korean government can reimburse Korean automakers for the tariffs and the duties that they do have to pay. So, I mean, it's just a series of sort of smoke and mirrors, and this agreement leaves in place the NAFTA provisions that never the emptiness of no labor, no environmental standards, none of the other standards that have been present in each one of these deals that have come forward. So it just is perplexing why the country, after a failed NAFTA policy, a failed CAFTA policy, PNTR with China that has decimated our manufacturing sector in this nation, why we think these continue to be a good idea, and we're going to continue to fight against them and enforce what little trade law we have in this country.
And thank God for that. You know, but here's my problem. You know, I know who my enemies are usually. When you're in a fight with somebody, you generally know who your enemies are. But, you know, unfortunately, look, I'm a big supporter of President Obama. I voted for him. I worked, to help to get him elected. To me, this, another one of those slaps in the face by someone who's supposed to be my friend.
Yeah. Yeah, look, it's frustrating, and we also are big supporters of this president and want to see him do the right things and continue to hope that he can stand up and do them. One of the things that we're struggling with in this country is, it's easy to look out at these agreements and say, well, the Koreans did this, or the Chinese did this, or the Vietnamese did this agreement. These agreements are the result of U.S. corporations who want to move there. So it's whether our government is in the grasp of corporate control and corporate money and the kind of financing that goes on, and we have politicians who day after day think this is the way they have to raise money, and the money is at the root of this. And when you even look what has happened to the labor movement in the last couple of years, and the loss of manufacturing jobs, that was the density of where the union was, and they shifted those jobs out. So while it's easy to say this is about other countries, this is really about American corporations leaving our communities in the wake and just chasing a short-term dollar. There's sort of no economic patriotism in America's capital anymore.
No, and it's, corporate America is no longer American corporate America. It's just multinational. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, in my opinion, should absolutely change their name to the International Chamber of Commerce, because there's nothing that the national chamber does that benefits this country, in my opinion.
No, we're in difficult times in our nation. And if we don't manufacture things, if we don't mine it and mill it and put capital against it and put labor against it and add value to it, we've got decades now of this nonsense that, well, we can all make a living off of the financial sector and bundling mortgages and creating fancy algorithms for trading on a stock market and raising ATM and credit card fees. And none of that creates wealth. You create wealth by making something and selling it, and we're quickly losing our ability to do that. Last year, 51% of the patents filed came out of China, and America, for the first time, is not the leader in innovation and in patents. And that's telling, and we need to take a look at the way we've done business globally and understand the dilemma we're putting ourselves in.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Tom Conway, Vice President of the United Steelworkers. You know, Tom, I've always said, you know, you can only have an economy of where I'll wash your car and you cut my grass, or you watch my kids and I'll paint your house for so long. You need to be able to take raw materials, like a tree, for instance, and turn it into furniture. But what we're doing in this country is we're cutting down trees in North Carolina. We're shipping it to China or, you know, Malaysia or who knows where, and shipping back finished products, value-added products.
Yep.
To me, that's the definition of a third world.
You watch the shipping industry that comes into this country every day, and if people could get their head around the vast amount of product that comes in through our customs, and then when those ships leave and they go back out, they either go empty or they go loaded with pulp and paper, and that pulp goes back, and those in those countries, they make boxes out of them and fill them with products and ship them in again. And so our imbalance is going to eventually just be our demise. And I think there are nations around this world, nations like China, who are no longer emerging market nations, no longer the kind of nation people perceive them to be. They're very steely-eyed business people who know what they're doing and set out about what they're doing for their country, and America continues to not see it the same way.
Well, we've allowed the greed class to act in their own best interest. And what bothers me, you look at this tax handout we're talking about giving the top 2% in this country, where do you think that handout's going to go? Do you think they're going to create jobs? I say, yeah, they're going to create jobs in China, in South Korea, not here, but in those places where they can make more money.
I mean, the idea that they say, if you give us our tax cut, we're going to create jobs. They've had it for the last 10 years. They haven't created jobs. I mean, it just the rhetoric that they roll out and the 30-second sound bites that run across our television night after night and people pay attention to, the notion that the way the spread in our earnings and our standard of living is growing so wide anymore is just amazing that America continues to tolerate it. And the level of CEO pay, CEOs in the rest of the world look at American CEOs and salivate.
Yep.
And wish they could earn that kind of money.
And there's this, as you pointed out, there's this fallacy. And, you know, these tax cuts back when Bush proposed them, we're going to create jobs. In fact, he said this.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
Well, those 1 million new jobs never came to fruition. But they handed out that $550 billion.
Under Bush, we lost 4.5 million jobs in manufacturing sector alone. You know, right now, today in this country, we have more people, Americans, on unemployment than we have employed in manufacturing in America. And where it used to be nearly 35-40% of our gross domestic product, it's fallen to 10 and 11, and financial services is outpaced that, and we don't invest in R&D the way we need to, and we don't send our best and brightest to engineering and science schools. They go to business school, and we tell them to go to Wall Street, and it's all becoming unraveled on us, and we've got to get control of our government, get control of our politicians, and somehow get the money out of the system.
I thought this was what the whole Tea Party thing was supposed to do, right the ship. I thought this was what they ran on, fair trade. Wasn't that it?
The Tea Party thing just mystifies me, because it's a group of people who were funded and led by exactly this same group, and I think it's been the biggest dupe that I've seen happen to so many probably well-meaning people, rightly angered, and want to change what's going on in the government, but just fundamentally won't face the reality of what capital is doing in the nation.
Yeah, as I always say, I go back to the Jay Gould quote, the railroad magnate from the late 1800s. I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half.
Yeah.
And you look at that and you go, right before our eyes.
Yep, sad story.
You know, but there have been a couple of unions that came out in favor of this, and this is I guess the tough question. You guys, the steel workers, and I understand your background is in steel. Some would argue that the steel industry would benefit from the opening of the Korean market to American-made cars. How would you respond to that?
Look, the arguments are always there, and those promises are always there. And so, so when they say to you, history does teach you something, and we've had every one of those promises, that every one of these deals, I find it really disingenuous to think that because they're going to open this up, all of a sudden out of Detroit and out of our plants, we're going to be able to send more cars to Korea than they're going to be able to send here. It just doesn't ring true to me, and I've heard that story so many times on these trade deals, and I frankly just don't believe it.
No, I don't either. And look, I look at Hyundai. One of the things that they tout in their television commercials is that they're American made. They've built a plant down in Alabama, I believe, and they're making cars here in the U.S. Which good, great. I'm happy you're doing that, and you should be able to sell those here. What I think is going to happen, and maybe you can help me if I'm wrong here. Once we pass this agreement, I think all those people down in Alabama are out of luck. They're gonna ship that plant back.
Look, you'll get some assembly work here, maybe. What will happen is your domestic content and the parts levels in your cars will dramatically decrease. And so they'll just land a bunch of parts in here, and in the end, America becomes not a manufacturer and doesn't have a supply chain and doesn't have machine shops where you're making crankshafts and you're making axles and you're making frames. It'll all get shipped in from other parts of the world, and a handful of people will bolt it up and roll it off a line and put a nameplate on it, and they'll tell us it's an American product made in America, and frankly, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking for a new vehicle myself right now, and I was looking at the Ford Mustang with, you know, stars in my eyes, hoping that maybe my wife would let me have this.
This
wonderful, beautiful automobile, and I'm looking at the label, and it says transmission made in China.
Well, look, that's what we're struggling with, and people have been sort of lulled into, you know, we'll get a cheap product this way, and they appeal to the consumers and tell them what you're getting in exchange for losing your job is a cheap product. Well, you know, you can only lose so many jobs, and you can't afford any products no matter how cheap they are, and that's what we seem to be missing, and we need to take a long-term view of it. And,
yep.
And companies who are doing that quarterly call every week and answering to some hedge fund or some investor or some youngster out there running a fund who's 32 years old and a laptop and the company can't devise a long-term investment strategy and a plan to grow in the country. That short-term mentality is going to eat us up.
Now, just like I started this segment off with the quote from Paul Craig Roberts, you know, these countries are thinking 20, 30, 50 years down the road, and we're thinking just to the next payday. Last question I've got for you here. You know, what do we do? How do we stop this?
Look, we've done a lot of polling, and the country gets this. I mean, Main Street, America, no matter where you go, literally across all parties, by numbers 87-88%, America knows this is wrong. And they've got to start fighting back about this. And every time some politician comes looking for a vote, these ought to be the only questions that are getting asked to them. And all the other nonsense and distraction that's out there, this is the heart of our country. And we won't be able to offer our children and our grandchildren a future if we don't deal with it now. And there are some decent, right-minded politicians, guys like Sherrod Brown out of Ohio and others, who are standing up and fighting back about this. And we need to be with them and elect more like them. And we really need to begin to pay very close attention to what's going on in our country and fight back for our democracy.
And what would you tell people to do? Tomorrow morning, they wake up, they read their morning newspaper, what should they do next?
I think you ought to start calling your congressman and tell them that this is a bad deal. This is the time for America to turn back these sort of deals, turn back this Korean deal. Let's send them back to the table and get this right and get a new model on these things.
We're not against trade, but we are against these job-killing schemes that have destroyed millions of jobs in this country.
Look, we need trade. We're in a global world. Yep. There's no denying that. And trade has been part of our nation since the founding of our nation. And we're not anti-trade, but we want a decent, fair trade that's not a game against us. And it's been rigged for far too long.
Yep. Call the Capital Switchboard, 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. Tell them, no South Korean free trade agreement. Not this one. Go back to the table. Tom Conway, Vice President of the United Steelworkers. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
All right, Rick. Always good talking to you.
Thank all right. You. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Do you love your mega bank? I'm talking about your local branch of City Chase Wells Morgan of America, or some similar financial conglomeration. As you might have learned from experience, these outfits have thousands of bankers who specialize in finding innovative new ways to gouge consumers worldwide. From rip-off fees to refusing to refinance home loans, the friendly slogan of these giants is, "We don't care. We're too big to fail." Unfortunately, Washington is too cowed by Wall Street money to cut these arrogant and avaricious giants down to size. But guess what? You and I can do it. We can make them smaller, one deposit at a time, by simply moving our money out of their clutches. After all, it is our money. You can join the thousands of Americans who are walking away from the don't-give-a-damn financial fortresses and switching their accounts to community banks, credit unions, socially responsible investment firms, and other banking entities eager to treat you like a valued customer. A recent consumer survey found that the biggest banking conglomerates, such as J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Bank of America, have sunk to their lowest consumer satisfaction level in years. 66% of customers say they'd consider taking their money out of these grasping empires. Appealing alternatives exist all across America. At credit unions, for example, late fees and overdraft fees average only half of what the big banks charge, and credit unions offer loans with interest rates that are 20% lower than those assessed by the giants. This is Jim Hightower saying, why put up with mega bank megalomania? Here are two websites to help you find a local bank that gives a damn about you and your community. FindACreditUnion.com and MoveYourMoney.info/FindABank.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Well, you know, you got to get something started. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any part of the program, you can go right to that website, pick up the podcast, listen to it right there, or you can watch it. You can watch us right here in the studio as we perform the program for you every evening, 9 to midnight, and you can watch it at your discretion. This WikiLeaks thing, to me, is honestly and truthfully, this is, I think, the most important story of this entire week. When you've got a Russian official, and of course, they're not going to say who he is. He's unnamed, according to the article, who said that detaining the founder of WikiLeaks is criminal, one, and two, the guy should be awarded a Nobel Peace Prize, a Nobel Prize. The guy said non-governmental and governmental organizations should think of ways to help him. This guy, who's a source from the Kremlin, said perhaps we could give him the Nobel Award. The remarks by the Kremlin official come after Assange was arrested Tuesday morning by London Metropolitan Police on a warrant from Sweden. You know, the fact that you got folks out there who are saying, hey, we need to help this guy. And I look at Colleen Rowley, and that name may sound familiar. She was one of the people who, I think, had we followed up on her lead, could have stopped 9/11. Because she was one of the FBI people who said, hey, there's some weird things going on with these flight schools. We should look into that. And nobody listened to her. Well, she's saying that, you know, had you this WikiLeaks guy been around, maybe, just maybe, 9/11 could have been prevented. And it's an idea, I think, worth thinking about. And they wrote she wrote a piece over at the LA Times where she goes through, you know, hey, had we had these folks looking into these secret documents and putting this stuff out on the web and having people sift through it, maybe you'd have had a bunch of people coming to the same conclusion that there were some crazy people out there wanting to do us harm. So what I find interesting, though, is how fast the government, how fast corporate America, how fast all of these forces, how fast they're going after this guy. And you remember Wendell Potter? We actually interviewed him on this program.
He's still around.
He was a communications chief for Cigna Insurance. He blew the whistle, said, hey, you know, the insurance industry is screwing the American people. They're cheating you at every turn. And he was shunned by the industry, of course. But for people like me, I consider the guy a hero. Well, he talked about Julian Assange, this WikiLeaks guy, saying, look, this is his words. He's saying, look, this is like the Pentagon Papers. He said, quote, what takes me back? The Nixon administration came after Ellsberg and tried to shut it all down, tried to intimidate the news media. He said, there are a lot of parallels here. And I think there are. I mean, you look at what they're doing to this guy. Potter called the freezing of WikiLeaks accounts by MasterCard, by Visa, by Amazon, and PayPal. The corporate America just clamped down on him. And you got people like Trader Joe Lieberman saying, oh, well, you know, we need to shut him down. PayPal did this at the request of the State Department. To me, that scares me. Because there's that word that Mussolini used. And I know some people are going to freak out, but it's fascism. This is where corporations and government are one. And look at the concerted effort going into this. Potter said this kind of action, this kind of involvement is dangerous. What's most important is freedom of information. So, as Potter says, I think this is a disturbing trend. And I agree with Potter, who also said a lot of this information that is now public is important for the public to know. And I agree with that. This is stuff that we should be knowing. And I think what we should be having is a discussion on should all of this stuff been secretive? He was asked to respond to claims by some of the members of the Obama administration and the news media that WikiLeaks documents have revealed nothing of importance. And Potter said it's nonsense. And I agree. It's nonsense. I think there was a lot of important stuff. So, but here's my problem. If nothing of importance was revealed, why are we freezing his accounts? Why are we going after this guy with both barrels? That's what we should be asking about. Why is the New York Times writing stories about it? Why? I mean, is this the future? Are these the witch hunts? I mean, the fact that you've got the Chinese government, and this is something that should scare everybody. The Chinese government, in my opinion, and some of the people I've talked to's opinion, they're going after the WikiLeaks guy, shutting him down with their superior cyber war ability. They've got the ability to go out and take this stuff off the web and just destroy it. We don't.
And think about that. Why would they do that, Rick? It's a pretty simple answer.
Well, they don't want their people knowing what they're doing.
Well, not just China, but they, you know, they don't want some of the corporate interests in America to be brought down. I mean, let's be honest. They've been using them.
Potter also said that the denial of service attacks to shut down WikiLeaks and the federal government and corporate attacks to squelch WikiLeaks hosting and funding sets a very scary precedent for the future of free speech on the internet. And, you know, I couldn't agree more. This is something that the conservatives, and look, this is where I could agree with true conservatives. A true conservative would look at this and say, we want government accountability. Mm-hmm. We want government transparency. Yet all we're in from the radical right, who are not, understand, they're not conservatives. We don't have many true conservatives in this country. We've got corporatists. And what the corporatists want to destroy this guy. And for me, it goes back to the banking thing. The fact that he made the tactical error of saying that he's got information on the banks. To me, that was his death knell. That was the day where they said, now we're going to get him. And they are. But understand, this is where a conservative, a true conservative, which we need to oversee what's going on in government. I would expect true conservatives to come out and help this guy and say, you know what? Thank you for providing this oversight, this transparency. But we're not hearing that. We're not hearing it from the corporatist class on the right. They want you to believe they're conservative, but they're not. And for the liberals as well, everyone talks about we need more transparency. I don't see the champions out there. I see a couple of folks, Operation Payback, they're doing some kind of weird thing. Hacked into Sarah Palin's bank account and did some other things, which, okay, funny, huh? This should be one of those, where are my teabaggers? You are the guys who are out there screaming, we need more, we need to control government. Here's the way you do it, with information. I agree with Ron Paul. When the truth can get you into trouble, there's something wrong. And as Potter said, it's vital. It's a vital question for our democracy. And one that he says he believes warrants vigorous national debate. He said we really ultimately need to have a conversation about how much all of this is really necessary. What are we really accomplishing by all the secrecy and all that's going on that's not being publicly disclosed? And I'm right there with him.
And remember, he was in the inner sanctum of the power in the healthcare industry, and they actually used him as a hitman to go after the movie producer, if you remember. Michael Moore came out with the first movie and attacked the healthcare industry, they went after him, and they used Wendell Potter. Now, Wendell Potter has publicly, I saw it a couple of weeks ago, the first time they publicly, on national TV, apologized.
He did apologize,
yeah. But, you know, he should be the canary in the coal mine. Because he knows how corporate America reacts. They go after people. They try to destroy people. They try to silence people.
Some are saying that, you know, Obama's thrilled that it makes Hillary look bad. I don't think it has anything to do with any of them. I think this is much bigger than about the individual players. I think this is about our nation, about our democracy as a whole. Are we adult enough to know this information? And I say we have to be. And going after this guy, to me, is a huge, horrible, horrible mistake. Because who's going to put themselves out like this again? And the other part of this guy did his due diligence, as far as I've been told, and as far as I understand. He didn't just throw all the documents out there and let it, wherever it was. He put out stuff that may not have been sensitive to national security, because nobody has been able to show anything that's sensitive to national security. Nowhere near outing an undercover CIA agent, which the conservatives were fine with when they got rid of her.
Well, when you have people, including a Republican, a prospective Republican candidate for president, say he should be executed, the message is, well, this man he's been responsible for people dying. Well, do you really believe when Valerie Plame was outed? Do you really believe that the contacts she had, or do you really believe that some of them didn't meet their death? We'll never know that. Common sense dictates that probably some of them did. Where was the outrage? Where was the outrage?
Well, because it was done by the Bushies. And this is where the fake conservatives, the corporatists, the right-wing talking heads just see an opportunity to bash on Obama instead of really coming to to what they should be. True conservatives would want oversight, would want transparency. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefits Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You've got something on your mind, question, comment, something outraging you. We want to hear about it. You want to talk about the corporatists. You want to talk about the fascists, if you will. Look at Dick Cheney. The Nigerian government has charred and they've issued a warrant for Dick Cheney on bribery. While he was CEO of Halliburton, they're saying that his companies, including Kellogg, Brown & Root, and the rest of them, bribed the Nigerian government officials. Somewhere around, $180 million in kickbacks to the Nigerian lawmakers. And they turned around, took the $180 million, and this is what always amazes me, how cheap our politicians around the globe are willing to work for. You look in Congress and they get a couple of $1,000 tax deduction, they get a couple of dollars campaign donation, and they give hundreds of millions of dollars away. Well, here, $180 million in kickbacks to the Nigerian lawmakers, and Cheney's group, KBR was awarded a $6 billion natural gas pipeline contract. So to me, you know, if you're doing business, that sounds like a good deal. I'll give you $180 million. You give me $6 billion. How do we get that kind of deal? So what's going on now is it's the negotiating part of this. Halliburton is planning to make a plea bargain in former Vice President Dick Cheney's corruption case, according to the Nigerian officials. However, Halliburton is in talks with Nigerian officials to make this plea bargain. $500 million, they're saying. So we're going to hand over, and look, we're going to probably have to pay a portion of this. This is what I love. They're going to write it off as a business loss. This is what I love. The company is going to take this hit. They're going to write it off as a loss, and you and I are going to pay for it to keep Sheeny out of jail.
How are they going to categorize that? Criminal prosecution tax? Exactly.
Personally, I say you let him do the 3 years in the Nigerian prison, face the 16-count indictment, and let the chips fall where they may, because if it were you or if it were me, we'd be extradited by now. And I say, you know what? Let Sheeny go. Let Mr. Sheeny go. Because that's how you say his name. It's not Cheney. It's Sheeny.
Sheeny.
Yeah, or Sheeny.
A.K.A. the Great Hunter.
Yes. I mean, but here's the thing. You look at somebody, the kind of juice the guy's got. He shoots somebody in the face, and the guy who gets shot says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I made you waste your shot. Wow.
Only in America.
Only in America. Well, this was a sad week. Elizabeth Edwards passed away after a long bout with cancer. And, you know, my wife said, you know, she was, you know, heartbroken because, you know, she really liked Elizabeth Edwards and she felt for the children. But I think like most people, not much sympathy for John. And I got to be honest, I was one of John Edwards' biggest supporters because I really thought he got it. He got the whole Two Americas thing.
You talk about a fall from grace.
Yeah. Her passing has brought some insanity. Just some absolute insanity. And I almost hate to say this. And I hate to give these kooks any recognition, even if it's in the most negative light that I can possibly come up with. And again, you know, being terrestrial radio, there's that FCC over my head where I cannot use the truck driver vernacular that I'm used to. The Westboro Baptist Church, if you will call them a church, they have announced that they will be picketing Elizabeth Edwards' funeral. Think about that for a second. I mean, how despicable do you have to be? And what's frustrating to me is this woman did her best in her life to do what was best for this country. And you've got these folks, these insane people. And I do believe these folks are insane. Going to picket this woman's funeral. And for what? I have no idea. They have no rational explanation for picketing this woman's funeral.
Was it some of the votes of her husband?
What has that got to do with her? It has nothing to do with her.
I'm just trying to think the way they would think.
If anything, this woman spent her final years fighting to make sure that people get health care. She spent her final years fighting to make sure that a health care bill was passed so that people, women especially, going through, especially what she was going through, had an opportunity at life. And for these people to picket her funeral to me is just plain wrong. I can't even express how this upsets me. And the sad thing, the thing that really angers me is that I support their right to do these despicable things. Because I do believe in the spirit of our Constitution. Although, I do believe in the spirit of the Constitution for everyone to have freedom of speech. And I look, last week we talked about the guy who was arrested in the parking lot with a whole arsenal in his car, a wounded veteran who was following them. And hopefully he did not have malice and hate in his heart to the point where he would have used the arsenal. But I'm surprised that kind of stuff doesn't happen. I'm surprised it hasn't happened. And, you know, if these people truly are people of the church, I hope there's something at the end of this. You know, my Catholic upbringing, that there is a hell. I hope there's a room there for them all. And I hope the evil people there protest them. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
If you're injured at work, do you think you need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. Retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting WorkInjuryInPA.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting WorkInjuryInPA.com or calling 695-4722.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Internet activists are declaring a cyber war against multinational companies and other organizations they have deemed hostile to WikiLeaks and its founder, Julian Assange. After Assange's arrest in Britain this week, hackers attacked the website of WikiLeaks' enemies, causing several of them to become inaccessible or slow down markedly. I remember the other night, and I talked about this last night, I went to get gas. My card wouldn't work. It was forever for my MasterCard to work. We were talking about Sarah Palin's accounts have been blocked and hacked, and good for her. And you know, these folks, Operation Payback, you know, they want to protect the freedom of the web, and I can understand it, because what we've seen is we've seen the corporations pile on top of this guy. I can't, if I want to support WikiLeaks, I cannot make a PayPal donation to help them. Yet these kooks who are going to protest at Miss Edwards' funeral, I can donate to those freaking nitwits. I can donate to the Ku Klux Klan, but I can't donate to a guy who's bringing transparency to our government. Are you freaking kidding me? But that's what's going on. And we, the sheeple, we're sitting idly by because, hey, American Idiot's on TV. I got my bowl of Cheetos. Or what's the other? Oh, Glee. I was talking to somebody today. Somebody gave me a whole 25-second rundown of the word of Glee. And I said, well, thank you for wasting almost a minute of my life. Thank you. I'm never going to watch the dumb show. I don't watch much television. But thank you. Thank you for boring me with your conversation. That's the problem. Bread and circus. Keep us mildly entertained. Keep us semi-fed. Dangle the little shiny thing in front of our face and, oh, look, watch it dance. And we don't pay attention to what's really, really important. Like the earmarks. Oh, I love that. That's another one. They dangle that in front of us. Oh, we're going to cut the earmarks, which are about 0.1% of the budget. And we're going to think that's going to solve our problems. Yeah, that's going to do it. In fact, Republicans have selected Representative Harold Rogers, Republican Kentucky, to lead the powerful House Appropriations Committee. They oversee spending. You know, they're the ones who oversee the federal spending. Rogers, however, is the prestigious earmark king. He's known as the Prince of Pork for the hundreds of millions of dollars he has stirred to his state and his district. The Wall Street Journal reports that some fiscal conservatives are asking whether he's the right man to chair the committee. And I would say he's the perfect man because he, like the whole movement there, hypocrite. They're going to tell you one thing and they're going to do something else. But again, it's amazing, amazing stuff.
SEIU has come out with their with their take on how we could better use these tax breaks instead of giving them to the rich. SEIU says that ending tax breaks for the rich could create about 3.4 million jobs over the next 2 years. Spokesman Mary Kay Henry says the $134 billion the government is handing back to the richest Americans just in the next 2 years could be used to reduce unemployment by about 2.2%. SEIU says the government decision to not create jobs with that money will instead be used for tax bonuses. According to U.S. Chamber Watch, CEOs at prestigious corporations like Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, ExxonMobil, and News Corp will each get more than $1 million extra dollars thanks to the tax cut for the rich deal.
Yay!
Yum, yum, yum.
Yay! So they can spoon feed us more fake news over at Fox. Nice. Yay! No, isn't that great?
I mean, we laugh and chuckle, but,
Yay!
Sometimes if you don't use levity, you cry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but here's the thing. I mean, what the average person would tell you, you know, the average tea twizzler would be out there going, Yep, you
no, I mean, this myth about one of the big problems in unemployment, it's still out there among a lot of people. Well, it's those people that are abusing the system, you know. And my first reaction is, what world are you living in? And I know that it is true. There are some jobs, at least temporarily, that aren't filled. And everybody has their story. Now, some of those stories may or may not be true, as you and I talked about the last couple of days. We talked about the accusations of welfare and using a card and all that, you know, and buying cigarettes and all kinds of expensive foods. And, you know, most of that is probably a lot inaccurate. But it's amazing these myths that just perpetuate themselves. And there's a lot of people that believe, well, we don't really have an unemployment problem. It's just that People don't want to take the jobs and get off unemployment compensation.
Yeah, they walk around with their heads in the sand. Doing the Sergeant Schultz.
Nothing, I see nothing, and I see nothing.
I see nothing.
Oh, what the heck?
I think I know what you did last night.
You know, you talked about Hyundai. There's a report coming out that the UAW President Bob King, he's taking a trip over to South Korea, and he's going to meet with some of the South Korean union leaders from the Sheet Metal Workers Federation. It's part of their effort to support the striking temporary workers at Hyundai up there. The UAW has picketed in the United States, their headquarters in Detroit this week, as part of a global worker justice campaign. UAW is working with labor organizer Richard Bernsinger in an effort to organize workers in foreign automakers, including Hyundai.
What the hell are they doing in South Korea organizing South Korean auto workers? They should be in Alabama organizing Alabama workers.
Well, I believe, well, I mean, Rick, you know how these things go. He'll be over there, and he'll make an appearance, and behind the scenes, they'll work out some strategy. That's how it works. And that's a good thing. You know, I mean, Hyundai is from South Korea. They're represented by workers' unions, and so it is here. And you work out a strategy where you mutually benefit.
Although, I guess, what's the point in organizing the workers in Alabama there? Because as soon as this free trade agreement passes, that plant will probably close.
But isn't that how it's always been? Whenever one side reacts, the other side reacts the other way, and then eventually, you know, on the other side, it's always about more and more and greater profits.
Yeah,
and labor has always reacted.
Because, you know, the workers in South Korea will work cheaper than the workers even in Alabama will work for.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about the South Korean workers. They're not afraid to go to the streets, which is maybe what we need to reconsider again.
Yeah, because they're living at the margin. I mean, that's the problem with people in this country. We're not at the margin. We're not a paycheck. Well, a lot of people are paycheck away from home.
Let's be honest. We're two generations from the Great Depression, too. The people who remember how bad it was, how horrendous it was. As you said, people literally starving in the streets, walking around for days on end without eating, trying to find jobs. People that went through that, most of them are dead. So we're even removed from that.
But then what I'm saying is those folks are at the margin. They haven't made those strides forward where they're comfortable, where they own things. One of the great, great things that Bush did, one of the great pieces of propaganda that he put out was this concept of the ownership society. This idea that you own things for a living. And we've accumulated a bunch of stuff. People in this country haven't lost that stuff yet. You're not going to see people in the streets. You're not going to see the kind of stuff that you see in South Korea and in other places around the globe until folks here lose those things, until we no longer have a reserve, until we no longer have credit cards to give us elasticity, when Republicans really start destroying unemployment benefits like they've been trying to do, like when they try to do away with welfare programs that keep people fed. Look, all of these social safety net programs are to keep the poverty class in this country, the falling middle class, falling into poverty, to keep those folks just cushioned enough to where they don't riot. And that's one of the things.
And when they gave him the message that you can be part of the investor class, and if these other people, those people on welfare and those people on unemployment, if they would be like you and get their act together, they could be part of the investor class too.
Yeah, well, how's that working out?
So, well, absolutely. I mean, it's obviously failed. It's a Trojan horse, but it's a policy that's a lot of working people embraced, especially in the 80s.
Yep. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
In an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Service Employees International Union says ending tax breaks for the rich could create 3.4 million jobs over 2 years. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says the $134 billion that the government is handing back to the richest Americans in the next 2 years could instead be used to reduce unemployment by 2.2%. SEIU says the government decision to not create jobs with that money will instead give CEOs huge tax bonuses. According to U.S. Chamber Watch, CEOs at Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, ExxonMobil, News Corp, and Massey Energy will each get more than $1 million extra dollars thanks to the tax cuts for the rich deal. UAW President Bob King will be in South Korea Friday to meet with the Korean Metal Workers Federation. It's part of the union's support for striking temporary workers at Hyundai. The UAW picketed Hyundai in Detroit this week as part of a global worker justice campaign. UAW is working with labor organizer Richard Benzinger in a renewed effort to organize workers at foreign automakers' U.S. plants. Republican Wisconsin Governor-elect Scott Walker, in a speech at the Milwaukee Press Club, said he's planning an attack on unions to drive down their wages and benefits. Walker says anything from decertifying to changing state labor laws affecting the collective bargaining rights of public workers in Wisconsin is on his agenda. He, of course, has no power to actually decertify a union, but he and the GOP legislature could wipe out the legal right of public employees to collectively bargain with the state. State employee unions are bracing for a war to defend themselves. Wisconsin AFSCME's Marty Beal says state workers aren't about to sacrifice their benefits for the future of a political tyrant. Delta has won another round against having unionized employees. Jesse Russell reports.
Another day means another union appeal of voting results at Delta. The International Association of Machinists is alleging that the airline used union-busting tactics to push baggage handlers into voting against union representation. Delta has claimed allegations are unjustified. 53% of the baggage handlers voted against union representation. That vote comes on the heels of a vote by stock clerks who also voted down representation. In a statement, the Machinists Union alleges Delta created an atmosphere of such widespread surveillance, coercion, and intimidation that a fair election was impossible. The National Mediation Board will weigh in on if a revote has any merit. The Association of Flight Attendants also narrowly lost a vote for representation of flight attendants at Delta, and that union has also called for a new election under similar allegations of intimidation.
If you're hired after January 1st at Walmart, don't expect to make as much as your coworkers on Sundays. Walmart will stop paying Sunday workers an extra dollar an hour, they say, due to declining sales. It won't impact workers in states that require overtime on Sundays, and it only affects workers hired in the new year. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell are we fighting for? Just got time to say your
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, hungryandhomeless.org. We're going to be doing our food drive December 18th through the 24th. The Carlisle Giant there, 255 South Spring Garden Street. We'll be living there the entire time from the 18th through the 24th. Taking your donations, food, any non-perishable, some warm clothes if you have it. Bring it out to the truck. We'll be happy to take it and make sure it gets to where it needs to get to help folks in this what's going to be a long winter. And if you've got a couple of bucks, please donate. Donate over at hungryandhomeless.org. It is a PayPal account, and I am kind of flipping mad at PayPal for this WikiLeaks thing, but this is the best way to get it to them, and it is all tax-deductible. Associated Press is reporting that a federal jury on Thursday convicted three current or former New Orleans police officers but acquitted two others in the death of a man during Hurricane Katrina. The jury of seven women, five men, convicted former officer David Warren of manslaughter in the shooting death of the 31-year-old Henry Glover outside a strip mall on September 2nd, 2005. The jury also convicted Officer Gregory McBray of burning Glover's body in a car. Lieutenant Dwayne Sherman was acquitted of that charge. Lieutenant Travis McCabe, was convicted of writing a false report on the shooting. Former Lieutenant Robert Italiano was cleared of that charge. A total of 20 current or former New Orleans police officers have been charged this year in a series of Justice Department civil rights investigations. The probe of Glover's death was the first of these to be tried. All five of the officers charged in Glover's case testified during the trial, describing the grueling, dangerous conditions they endured during the August 29th, 2005 storm when thousands of desperate people were trapped in the flooded city. Looting was rampant, they said, and bodies rotted on the streets for days because there was nowhere to take them, officers recalled. With lives on the line, the officers said they had no time to write reports or investigate anything but the most serious of crimes. Prosecutors said Katrina can't excuse the officers' actions, but may explain them. And look, you know, here's the thing. If they killed this guy, burned him in a car, we got places for folks like that. But again, I look at that whole time. It was an absolute failure of leadership by the Bush administration. And again, one of those things where you had a crony in a position where you needed an expert. You had a political appointee where you should have had a qualified person running FEMA. And the one thing that I gave Bill Clinton utmost credit for was there were good people in those positions. Now, understand, and this is one of the things that bothered me during all this, when politics were on the line, and again, go back to what I've been saying this past week. Republicans are good at politics. They're not good at governing. They're excellent at politics. But when it comes to actually doing the job, not so good. If you remember during the election of 2004, when Florida was being threatened by a hurricane, FEMA went in and there was every resource you could possibly imagine right there, readily accessible to take care of those folks. In fact, you had FEMA people tripping over each other to accommodate. Why? Florida was a battleground state. You needed to show, hey, you know, we're on top of things. We're competent. Look what we're doing for you. Well, a year later, when they knew the levees would be breached, they knew this. And they knew from 1995, 10 years earlier, that the levees could break. Because there had been studies done. You know, this stuff just doesn't happen out of the blue. They knew this was a possibility. And when Bush said, oh, I never knew, and then the tapes are released that the weather guy saying, look, there's a really good possibility the levees are going to be breached. He figured out that he was not telling the truth. And when Brownie got scolded, when he was like a scolded whipped dog, he finally came out fighting and saying, look, I didn't screw this up. They did. So when heck of a job Brownie started fighting back, we started to find out the truth. And again, it's when we have these whistleblowers, when we have these people who are putting this information out there, we shouldn't attack them. We should thank them and say thank you for helping us keep our democracy. But this whole mess down in Katrina, again, if it would have been a year earlier and there would have been election and Louisiana would have been a battleground state, boy, the best of everything, and you wouldn't have any of these situations.
And I mean, let's be honest, race entered into it. It was a largely black city, heavily Democratic, voted Democratic. If you don't think that had anything to do with it, you have your head in the sand. And some of the things that we saw and we learned down there, if you want to see true anarchy, that's where it was. And then you had well-connected people coming in there and just exploiting workers like you have never seen. The stories that we heard about workers coming in there and being summarily brought in and fired, and they'd bring in workers from Central America, and they would pay them $2-3 less, and they eventually wound up firing them and bringing workers in from South America.
Cheaper,
and
cheaper,
it was
cheaper.
Just race to the bottom.
What I love,
unbelievable exploitation.
There are two things that stick out in my mind about the whole thing. The very first thing that sticks out of my mind is looking at the houses. where on the door or on the side of the building you see the number of either dead people or dead animals, mm-hmm. or people in just right on the door. They put the numbers right there. Yeah. And you went
rescuers,
down street after street after street. And they did it so they knew which houses they went to, so they didn't duplicate it. But, you know, just seeing those numbers, to me was amazing. And talking to some of the people who lived through it. I remember the one guy, they called him Tiger. Some of the video that he showed us of him wading through this soupy muck of oil and chemicals and water and feces and dead bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there was nobody there to help.
Those dead bodies being bloated and rats eating them.
Yep.
I mean, it was right out of the third world.
And the other thing I remember, the contractor abuse.
Yep.
There was a contractor, and we paid $47 per ton to move trash, we the taxpayers. $47 per ton. By the time corporate America had bid this thing out, had subcontracted it down, and they went through a whole line of 15, 20 different companies who took the contract and subcontracted out, took the contract, subcontracted it out. The guy who finally did the work was paid about $3 a ton. So think about that. It was like $45, $47 a ton that we paid. And the guy who actually did the work got $3. So there were all those people from the top that got that first contract all the way down to the guy who did the work who took their little cut. And that redistribution of wealth from us, we the taxpayers, to these corporations so that they could line their pockets. And they basically stole from the recovery of that area. To me, that was criminal. Absolutely criminal.
And do you remember some of the tales of how the some of the American Indians were exploited? They had people coming out in Arizona and New Mexico talking to these Native Americans and saying, you know, you want to make good money? We can get you real good money. We'll guarantee you 6 month work. All you have to do is give us, I believe the sum was $5, $10, and they went on a bus, took them to New Orleans. Those people disappeared. Never heard from them. Undocumented workers were exploited. They were threatened if any of them complained. You know, they were summarily fired or the sheriff showed up at their door to intimidate them.
And what I loved also about it is they went in, when the government back took over, you had the right wingers taken over and they fired all the teachers, dumped all the teachers, all of them out the door, and they set up these little charter schools. And they've proven that did nothing to help education. What it did is it helped the bottom line of these private schools who, again, for profit. I love how this stuff happens. The corporatists always find a way of making a profit out of a tragedy at your expense. And this is the thing that gets me when I hear about all this privatization. What we need is we need more private. And we're going to hear about it here in the state of Pennsylvania over the next 6 months. We need to privatize the state store. We need to privatize the parking garages. We need to privatize the turnpike. We need to privatize. And why? Because there's a lot of profit to be made. There's big money to be made. Because what will happen is you'll get these financiers who go, ooh, we can lease the state stores or we can lease the turnpike. Let's go take that money that you, the taxpayers, have given to the banks. Let's get them to loan that to us. We'll take much more than we need. We'll give the districts, you know, a couple pennies. We'll undercut it because you're not going to get what that asset's worth. And then we'll pay ourselves. And at the end of the contract, we won't do any maintenance. We won't upkeep it. And we'll just hand it back to them in horrible shape and let the taxpayers repair it. Isn't that a beautiful? I mean, how do I get that kind of dig?
Amazing.
Amazing stuff.
You know, the most eerie, if you remember, we took that bus tour. What I'll never forget, I think, as long as I live, is when they took us a little bit into the neighborhoods. And what the city said, if you're not going to tear down your city, if you're not going to tear down your house, and you're going to abandon it, or if you're going to abandon it, you unless you want to tear down. What you have to do, if you remember, Rick, is tear out the walls.
Yeah, you had to gut the house.
And you had to gut the house because sure. If you didn't, there would be infestation of snakes and vermin, rats, mice. So house after house, most of them had the doors open. All you saw is the shell of a house,
yep.
Row after row, block after block.
Well, no, they were worried about mildew. You couldn't live in it.
They were worried about infestation as far as the eye could see.
Yeah, and what's amazing is what we ended up doing, the people who did rebuild their houses, we used Chinese drywall that they had to tear out years later because it was harming their health as well.
That's amazing, not even getting stuff into this temporary
the
structures.
FEMA houses, yep.
The FEMA houses.
The little trailers.
Oh,
yeah, that's another one. Hey, but, you know, that's Bush, that's conservative rule right there. Good stuff. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. Stick around.
Of a brand new world economies. I don't believe them, I won't despair. They are a group and they're coming back to stay. So the stand can't climb back up to 50% once again, my friend.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Do you love your mega bank? I'm talking about your local branch of City Chase Wells Morgan of America, or some similar financial conglomeration. As you might have learned from experience, these outfits have thousands of bankers who specialize in finding innovative new ways to gouge consumers worldwide. From rip-off fees to refusing to refinance home loans, the friendly slogan of these giants is, "We don't care. We're too big to fail." Unfortunately, Washington is too cowed by Wall Street money to cut these arrogant and avaricious giants down to size. But guess what? You and I can do it. We can make them smaller, one deposit at a time, by simply moving our money out of their clutches. After all, it is our money. You can join the thousands of Americans who are walking away from the don't-give-a-damn financial fortresses and switching their accounts to community banks, credit unions, socially responsible investment firms, and other banking entities eager to treat you like a valued customer. A recent consumer survey found that the biggest banking conglomerates, such as J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Bank of America, have sunk to their lowest consumer satisfaction level in years. 66% of customers say they'd consider taking their money out of these grasping empires. Appealing alternatives exist all across America. At credit unions, for example, late fees and overdraft fees average only half of what the big banks charge, and credit unions offer loans with interest rates that are 20% lower than those assessed by the giants. This is Jim Hightower saying, why put up with mega bank megalomania? Here are two websites to help you find a local bank that gives a damn about you and your community. FindACreditUnion.com and MoveYourMoney.info/FindABank.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds peaceful. Don't you know,
together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion.
Hey, welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Got an email during the break. Again, if you want to email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally, and sometimes I use a couple of them on the air. Jason writes, this morning I was reading Stephen Greenhouse's piece on the differing opinions of some labor leaders on the Korean free trade deal. I was wondering what your opinion on this is. Are the exports really enough to warrant the support of UAW and AFSCME? First, not AFSCME. It's UFCW. And from some of the reports that I've read, UFCW has, they're claiming hundreds of thousands of jobs in the beef industry. And this will, honestly, this will open up a little bit to the beef industry. I don't know that it's going to be enough, but in their self-interest, they think it's going to help their members. Personally, I'm, again, the same thing with the UAW. They think in their radical self-interest that this is going to keep jobs in the U.S. on the part of this, who came out immediately in favor of it. I don't think that they're looking at what's right in front of them. They saw the number that, okay, yeah, we're going to increase the number of cars that the U.S. is going to be able to import into Korea by from 7,000 to as much as 55,000 and then to 75,000. So they're seeing, hey, we're going to make our big SUVs and our big trucks and we're going to push them into Korea. They see that as, hey, we're going to be able to create jobs here, maybe about 800. It could mean as many as 800 jobs. The Koreans, on the other hand, they're going to be able to move from the 500,000 cars that they're currently selling in the U.S. to over 1 million. So, I got to be honest. I'm not as optimistic as the UAW guy. I'm just not. Because I don't believe that they're going to be able to continue. I don't believe the big three are going to continue to increase jobs here. I think it will be a show more than anything. And as Tom Conway said earlier, what we'll see are more foreign parts. And it's not just, the assembly of the car. You want to be able to make the supply chain. And it's that domestic content number, again, that 35% to me is such a huge number. And even on the tariff end, we're not doing away with tariffs. They're still going to be able to charge us 4% to import a car into South Korea, while we'll only be able to charge 2.5%. So personally, I think that should be the other way around, because generally you use tariffs to protect your domestic labor. And I've always been a big advocate of this. I've been saying, okay, I don't care. Trade is fine, but we got to take some things out of the equation. Labor costs should be out of the equation immediately. I don't care if your rubber ball is made in China or the U.S. Whoever that worker is making that rubber ball, it costs $1, $2, $10 to make it here in the U.S. The tariff should, and 10 cents in China, the tariff should be the difference of the two. So let's say you made a little rubber ball, and it's $1 labor here in the U.S. and it's 10 cents in China. To bring that Chinese rubber ball into the U.S., you put a 90 cent tariff on to level the labor costs. Now, who can do it better? Who can make the better ball, the more efficient ball? That's where competition is. And that's what I've always said. I'm in favor of competition just on the right things, on productivity, on quality, on service, not on who's willing to slit whose throat more often, who's willing to do it cheaper and with less benefits and with less health care and all of that stuff. I think we should be racing to the top, not plummeting to the bottom.
Well, this isn't a done deal either. I mean, it still has to pass Congress, Rick, so we shall see.
Yeah, I was encouraged today. I mean, for the past couple of days, I've been, where's Trump go? Where's Gerard? Where are the labor leaders in this Cohen, the CWA? Where are these folks, and look, it's a tough thing. When the UAW came out, they put the first message on it. And that's what the administration wanted. That's the reason that I really think the UAW was kind of strong-armed into it. And, like the president of the UAW said, look, I represent my members. And this was all about what he thought were his members. And he thought that, and to answer your question directly, it's this radical self-interest. And sometimes, and I'm not afraid to say it, sometimes labor... we're so tunnel-visioned on protecting our members that we lose the larger picture of what's best for the country. And these deals, while it may be good for one sector or this sector over here, it's, in my opinion, bad for working people across this country. So that's my take on it. Again, thanks so much for the email. If you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. But it brings us back to this idea of tariffs and the whole idea of free trade, Jake. The fact that if you think about it, during the country's history, from the beginning of the country, we ran our entire government off of tariffs. We ran our entire government off of people wanting to sell their products in our markets. And as a government, we said, you can bring it here, but we're going to benefit from it. And during the after the Civil War, that's how we recovered. They put up tariffs. You want access to our markets? We're going to enforce these tariffs because we're going to protect our industries. We needed to rebuild. I'm saying we're in that rebuild mode now. We've allowed our industries to suffer. We've allowed them to be shipped overseas. Now is that protection, that duck and cover. We're getting our butt kicked all around the globe because we've agreed to these really bad agreements.
And therein lies the million-dollar question. Will we, as a nation, reform our economic system to the point where money does not have this corroding influence?
Well, as long as money is unlimited.
As long as money's calling the shots, are we going to change? I don't see it.
Well, as long as we have unlimited money going into campaigns from corporations, no. Because the candidates, they're going to worship at the trough of the corporate structure because that's what they need to get elected. And to me, that's number one. We need to undo that. And this is what happened. This is what that decision, that Supreme Court decision giving George Bush the presidency got us. A very corporate Supreme Court. I mean, you look at Alito, you look at Roberts. Roberts in particular, the guy who said, oh, I'm going to be the umpire calling balls and strikes. If it's decided law, if it's stare decisis, it's what it is. I'm not an activist.
Now, what do they call that? Perjury. I mean, let's be honest. It was under oath. Did he lie?
Yeah, he overturned 100 years of campaign finance law. 100 years with one decision. And from what I understand, it's kind of weird how they took it because I don't think they had the five justices, if I remember right, that wanted to take the case.
And isn't there an effort to look into
Henry Waxman?
How that and we haven't heard a lot about that since.
Well, we've been fighting other things. I mean, the Republicans want to hand away the baby with the bathwater with these tax handouts to the top 2%. And what's funny is we've got a news agency, fake news over at Fox, who'll sit there and lie and have five people swear it's true. You know, I often, back to my grandfather who had some really great sayings. I look at Fox with one of his sayings. They're a group that would lie when the truth would be better. Lie. You can't. You'll make a kick out of this. I remember they were talking about one of the big rallies on Washington, and they were cutting to pictures of the ralliers, and one picture was people walking around with shorts on and t-shirts and bright sunny, the sun's shining down, people got sunglasses on, they're all walking around having a good old time. And then they cut to the next picture. Oh, and around the corner are people with parkas on and freezing their behinds off. And it's a dreary day and snow's coming down. And they lead you to believe that, yeah, that was the same event where all of these people came together. And what amazes me is it was a couple of days till anyone noticed it because the dimwits who watch fake news on Fox, oh, I didn't know. I've never saw that. I mean, it's amazing to me.
They just came out today with some new information. Supposedly they uncovered it about the language. Were you going to get into that? Okay.
Yeah.
Be my guest.
Yep. DC, the Washington, D.C. managing editor of fake news over at Fox evidently got himself into a little bit of a jam. Got his little hand caught in the cookie jar. The guy's name's Bill Salmon. He was the guy who was asking his news department to refer to the public option as the government-run option. So, of course, later that night, what'd you have? You had a special report with Brett Baer using the exact same language. And you read the email that he sent out to all of his people, and he said, friendly reminder, let's not slip back into calling it the public option. Number one, please use the term government-run health insurance, or, when brevity is a concern, government option, whenever possible. Number two, when it is necessary to use the term public option, which is, after all, firmly ensconced in the nation's lexicon, use the qualifier so-called, as in the so-called public option. Number three, here's another way to phrase it, the public option, which is the government-run plan. And number four, when newsmakers and sources use the term public option in their stories, there's not a lot we can do about it, since the quotes are, of course, sacrosanct. But then they went back and they usually doctored those quotes anyway. So, I mean, this is pretty much the Luntz report. They went back and they read Luntz's report, who is an absolute genius. I will say Frank Luntz is a genius, a linguistics genius. Death tax to me is brilliant messaging, because the simple have a visceral reaction. And, oh, I don't want to pay taxes when I die. Trust me, they're not coming after your 15 cents. But, you know, here's the reality. Fox News is a powerful megaphone. So when you've got news people focusing the language, focusing the linguistics towards anti-government rhetoric, like fake news over at Fox does, it's powerful. And, you know, gee, now we find out. Now we find this out a year after. And are we surprised? No. We always knew it. But maybe, and again, I don't know that this story gets to the fake news on Fox people, because they have a blind allegiance. I have no blind allegiance to any news media. I read the story, I think about it, and I present it. And I give you my opinion on it. And I encourage you to call me and say, hey, Rick, I agree with you, I don't agree with you. That's the reason we have this program. But I look at this is disingenuous, this is dishonest, and this ridiculous, well, we're fair and balanced. No, you're insane.
Well, think about the phrase government health care conjures up images of the government just peeking over your shoulder and controlling every move you make in the healthcare system. I mean, you're right.
I think of Goldsmith.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant imaging. Totally false. Totally false. But yet brilliant imaging.
Oh, absolutely. It's just the most amazing of. Oh, man. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. if you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yes, he is, and he wants... He wants Republicans in office so that they can cut welfare and they can cut those food stamp programs and they can get those lazy people back to work. Because, you know, like my one friend said, you know, Jesus said that teach a man to fish, he'll be able to eat for a lifetime. You give him a fish, he'll eat for just that one day, but you teach him to fish. And, you know, I got to be honest, you know, I'm not a theological scholar. I don't remember that in my book. But I did go and check. I did go get my holy book, and it was right there. Jesus was on the road to Jericho. He was stumbling down the road, parched, dying of thirst, hadn't eaten in days, butt naked. It's raining, no shelter. And Confucius was sitting under a bus stop, waiting for the daily bus. And Jesus tripped over a stone and landed in Confucius's lap. And Jesus said, you know, I'm starving. Can you give me something to eat? I'm thirsty. I need something to drink. I need some clothes because I'm naked. And thanks for the shelter here, buddy. And Confucius said, I would give you a fish and all of these things, but it would teach you nothing. It would teach you nothing, my son. But if I were to teach you how to do this yourself, you would then be better. In your book, right? Did you see that? Wasn't that right there? Jesus, Confucius, kind of waiting for the bus together. That's not quite how it worked out, but I thought it was interesting. What I find funny is all of these folks who ran on the anti-corporate, anti-government, anti-Washington, inside the Beltway platforms, they have hired all corporatists. 13 new Republican members of Congress have hired corporate lobbyists to manage their offices. Representative-elect Marlon Stutzman hired lobbyist Tim Harris as his chief of staff. Harris worked as a lobbyist for a trade association representing the shareholders of energy companies. You know, folks like American Electric Power, Duke Energy, Vectren, you know, those kind of little companies who, help out a little bit. Republican from Kansas, Mike Pompeo, he hired a guy for his chief of staff who was a lawyer for the Koch brothers. You know, the Freedom Works folks, the folks who brought you the Tea Party. Yeah, hired him as his guy. Robert Dole, Republican from Illinois, he hired a corporate lobbyist as his chief of staff. He was the former head guy over at BGR Holdings. Their clients are from China and the coal industry and nuclear companies. So, hey, you know, we're going to get a lot of really working class legislation out of those folks, don't you think? Tea Partiers, like I said, be careful with the revolution you're asking for, because the one you're going to get is a lot worse than you got. Chip Kravick, Republican from Minnesota, he hired a corporate lobbyist, Rod Grams, as his chief of staff. He was a lobbyist for Hecht, Spencer, and Associates, where he represented 3M, Norfolk Southern, and the Financial Service Roundtable. Oh, boy. I understand the Financial Services Roundtable is the trade association for the biggest banks. So do you think we're going to get some progressive legislation to oversee the banking industry out of Chip's office? Don't hold your breath on that one. Christy Noem, she's from South Dakota, another Republican. Took another person as her chief of staff, former vice president of the lobbying firm Direct Impact. Understand, Direct Impact specializes in building support for corporate causes. They boast on their website that they once generated hundreds of letters to the FCC on behalf of their big telecom clients. So, again, more media consolidation. Do you think we're going to get some small ownership legislation, some low-power FM license requests out of our friend there in South Dakota? I wouldn't hold your breath on it. Jeff Denham, Republican from California, he selected another lobbyist for his chief of staff. He's the founder of his own lobby firm. So at least this guy had some gumption. He went out and started my own lobbyist firm. Now he's the chief of staff there. Pat Toomey, our boy here, senator from Wall Street, he selected a corporate lobbyist as his chief of staff. Of course, he worked at the lobbying firm Latham and Watkins. Very nice for him. And you go down the list, boom, 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 all corporate lobbyists, all for these big special interests. You look at this guy, Steve Pierce from New Mexico, another Republican, hired a lobbyist for the casino industry so you can keep screwing those casino Indians. Rand Paul, he selected an anti-union lobbyist because, you know, he hates the labor movement. This guy was head of the vice president of the National Right to Work Committee. So, you know, good times ahead. I'm thinking there's some really good times ahead for us.
Not.
Well, I mean, you know, here's what gets me. And I've had these conversations with people who say, well, we need to have us some term limits because we don't want those people, those representatives in office very long. My dentist does this to me all the time. Every time I walk into his office, he wants to bait me into a fight over term limits. And I say, well, the problem with term limits and what I have is you say you want two terms in Congress. That's 4 years. I think it takes at least a year at minimum just to know where the bathrooms are and find your own office. So finding where your butt gets into a chair, taking that long, you're going to be ineffective for the first several months at least. So who fills that void? Well, who fills that void are corporate lobbyists. So if you want to be an effective legislator and you want to get your agenda done, because most people, don't they? They go into Congress and say, you know, I got some work I want to get done. Well, who does it? You get things written by corporate lobbyists. And we know these bills aren't Bushian. They're not two pages with a page and a half of pictures. There's actually some reading that has to be done. So what you get, these corporate lobbyists, these corporate lawyers, in their lawyer speak, who put things into those bills that benefit them and them alone. And you get these term limited guys who go, well, I want to play nice with the corporate lobbyists because maybe I can be one. And you got a problem, which is why I'm against term limits. Pretty simple. I do think we have term limits already. It's called an active informed electorate who's willing to go vote. Don't you think?
Yes, I agree. But the argument against your position is, Rick, you now have a incumbent protection racket going on. And you know, to some degree, they're right. Because of the influence of money. It all comes down, once again, whether you're talking about the direction of our country or you're talking about legislation which helps the country in a representative way, it all comes down to money.
Well, it does come down to money, which is why we, the voters, have to say, look, we want people who are going to rein that in. I do believe the Republicans need to take this up. I think there should be some common ground here because the Republicans have to be looking at this and saying the big advantage that we have in this last election, this mountain of corporate cash that was spent on our behalf. See, politicians in general should be scared of this decision. And we, the people, should be scared because we've given the power to the corporations. They now have the influencing tool. They have the large pile of cash. They don't need the parties anymore. They don't, which is why, you know, as badly mismanaged as the RNC was with their $25 million debt, truth of the matter is they didn't get enough money because you had Karl Rove going out there getting his own money, working on behalf of corporate America. you had all these freedom works and Americans for Prosperity and, you know, Americans with cute little puppies who were advocating on the side of people like Toomey. And what I find interesting is we didn't have that visceral reaction to the repulsion that I thought we should have had to these ads that were coming at us from people like the International Hit Squad at the Chamber of Commerce, from people like Freedom Works and the people like Americans for Tax Reform or all of these other euphemistically named groups. We didn't have that visceral repulsion like I did. It made me sick. But the Republicans had better get ahead of this. And so have the Democrats. I think there's common ground here because both parties have got to be looking at it going, you know what? Corporate America is going to take over, and we're both going to be their, you know, female dog, if you will. Again, taking us back to this free trade agreement, because you and I, we suffer through these agreements. Who gains? The wealth class. Yeah, because I've had people say, well, if they're so bad, Rick, why do we pass them? Again, it goes back to my premise of politics for which part of the people. You know, I love hearing folks say, well, I just want them to represent the people. I say they are. They're representing a small sliver of the people, the ones who fund them. And those are the ones who benefit. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this to wrap things up. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
To be honest, I got a kick out of Maureen Dowd's piece the other day. It was titled Pass the Caribou Stew. She writes, the doomed caribou gazed calmly across the Alaska tundra at Caribou Barbie. The female caribou could easily have escaped since it took the Wasilla Huntress 6 shots, 2 rifles, and some help from her dad to bag her prey, giving credence to Levi Johnston's contention that she isn't all that proficient with guns. But inexplicitly, the caribou just waited to get gunned down by Sarah Palin, who came across less like a pioneer woman than Private Benjamin in her camo, her French manicured nails, her cap that says in pink, "Girls in Guns," and her 72-year-old father and her TLC reality show crew. I saw the episode, and I got to be honest, it was stupid. But before she left, she checked her freezer. And this was great. I love the suspense. Well, you know, sometimes, you know, we got to check our freezer. So she went, and there, you know, a couple things in there. And as Dowd points out, shouldn't her freezer have been packed since, you know, she was out clubbing those halibut over the head with, you know, and gutting them on the show? Did they do a whole hunt thing? But if you remember her pontification, as Dowd points out, my dad taught me, don't you know, that, you know, if you want to have wild, organic, fresh food, healthy food, you're going to have to go out there and hunt yourself and fish yourself, and you're going to have to fill her up your freezer. Fill her up. I don't think the average person in this country, and I think Dowd's point is the average person in the country identifies with this crazy woman. And as I've been saying, the more she puts herself out there, the more she puts herself in the spotlight, the more average, normal America is gonna see her for the doofus that she is. And Aaron Sorkin was quoted in the Guardian, where he called her a deranged and witless bully and a phony pioneer girl, which I think is kind of funny. West Wing creator Aaron Sorkin said, you know, her program is ridiculous, and that she shot this animal strictly for political gain, calling her program a snuff film. And, you know, of course, Palin, she shot back because she was looking to bait PETA. The whole reason that she did this was to try and, as I've said a number of times, it's about outraging the outraged. It's about creating a, hey, look at me, kind of environment. So what she did is kind of a preemptive strike, because she knew she was going to shoot this thing. She was going to execute this caribou on TV, that somebody would get upset. So she said, you know, unless you've never worn leather shoes, sat on a leather chair, or eaten meat, save your condemnation, she said. Well, you know what? I agree with Sorkin. You know, he says, I eat meat, chicken, fish, have shoes and furniture made of leather, and I'm able to make a distinction between you and me without feeling the least bit hypocritical, he said. I don't watch snuff films, and you make them. You weren't killing that animal for food or shelter or even fashion. You were killing it for fun. You enjoy killing animals. You don't just do it, and he said, and you didn't just do it for fun. You didn't just do it to make money. That was the first moose ever murdered for political gain. You knew there'd be a protest from PETA, and you knew there would be an opportunity to hate on some people. You witless bully. What a uniter you'd be, bringing the right together with the far right. And the really big kick here from Sorkin. He said what Palin did on her show is exactly what Michael Vick went to prison doing. And I go, wow, that's pretty rough language there. I don't think so. I don't agree. But I do think it was a political point.
Metaphorically, there's some connection there. I understand what he's saying, but legally there is a differentiation.
And look, I said during the day today to our producer, the guy who moves the knobs and tubes over there, I said, I'm not against hunting. You know, I've never hunted. To be honest, I grew up in a city. The only hunting that ever happened in my neighborhood were people. You know, and you did your best to get away from that. So I kind of have a sympathy for the animal, because I've been hunted before. Fortunately, I was able to get away. But, you know, I've had that occasion. And I'm not against people going out and hunting. You know, it's a family kind of thing. If that's what you're into, you want to go out and freeze your stones off, you go right on ahead and dress up in expensive clothes and, you know, go ahead. Do what you got to do.
Sit in a tree.
But to say that, you know, the show is not edited garbage is, or what Sarah says, it's a documentary. And it kind of makes you wonder about her intelligence level on what a documentary actually is. It's a reality show. It's watching her make an idiot out of herself. And I can't wait for the next episode. Oh, boy. She's going to take the Kate plus eight woman out, Goslin or Goosling or whatever her name is. They're going to go camping together. And as we already know, Kate only lasts a couple hours, and then they split up. Because she didn't grow up in the frozen desert.
There's no connection there at all.
Well, I mean, look, they're trying to feed off of each other's stardom, you know, because the idiot public looks to both of them as something. And I say, you know, I don't know why either one of them are worth watching. But to me, it's a train wreck. And the reason I will peek in is because it's something here to talk about. Because I think it's important to realize that this woman could conceivably be our president. That's what scares me. Oh, I got to fill my freezer, don't you know? With her manicures and her, yeah. Nice job. And you looked at her and you could see the makeup on her face, and I'm going, you know, exactly what's behind the camera? I'm sure that there were nice warm tents back there, nice warm, you know, little... You didn't get to see that stuff, but you don't think the camera crew were sleeping in tents, do you? No. Or you don't think Sarah brought the camera herself and, oh, let me get the shot, don't you know, before I sit down here with my gun and have Dad work the lever. I mean, in watching that, part of me, and I told our producer the day, I said, there's part of me that looks at her and goes, there's some kind of weird dynamic going on with her and the old man, some kind of weird father complex. Oh, was that good enough, Daddy? And I'm going, really? Kind of kooky. She is. I mean, I got to, you know, call it the way it is. She's kind of kooky. Anyway, speaking of kooky, we're going to be doing again, and I've had people say, I can't believe you're going to be sleeping out in a parking lot of a supermarket from December 18th through the 24th, freezing your stones off.
The first week in winter.
That's right. We're going to be doing that. It's supposed to be 30 degrees every day. So we're going to be suffering for you to come out and help us. Because, look, if you want to come out, I went and got the boxes today. And thank you to the people over at Smith Appliance for providing the boxes. I got a couple extra boxes, $25 a night. You can experience this wonderful winter wonderland getaway. This rare opportunity at a vacation wonderland full of memories and great tidings and gourmet food and deluxe accommodations. That's right. We will have the deluxe accommodations for you. You'll have your own cardboard box. Of course, you're going to have to bring your own blankets. I'm not providing that because I'm not doing laundry. So I would suggest bring a lot of them, not a couple of Afghans. Also, we will provide, gourmet meals. I'm going to probably pick up a bagel or two for breakfast for you. A little bit of orange juice. I don't drink coffee, so I think you're on your own there. But in the afternoon, a couple of hot dogs, maybe a hamburger, because we're hoping to get enough people out to come out. $25 a night. Remember, check out hungryandhomeless.org. Thanks for being here. Thanks to our man moving the knobs and tubes. And thank you. See you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy's coming.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.